everybody. Welcome back to the show. Very excited to have you with us as always. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
It's going very well with me as well. And today we are finally back to talk about a little more Big Brother 15. However, before we get into all of that today, I want to let you guys know about a couple of things. First of all, I feel like at this point it's going without saying that this season of Big Brother has been pretty much terrible. And
yeah,
and if you're interested in things that aren't terrible, we have brought this up before and will not hesitate to bring it up again. We cannot advocate strongly enough to check out this new reality game that's been airing on ABC called Whodunit. And I'm pretty sure you can find all of the episodes to catch up on ABC.com, assuming you live in America, as all correct people do. And I feel like it's a very smart and cerebral show. And I think if you like our podcast and the way we kind of like to look at the games and so forth, I think you'd very much like Whodunit. And we have some podcasts talking about Whodunit with our good friend and Survivor historian Jay Fisher. And so once you've caught up, which I highly, once again, recommend doing, definitely check those out. Yeah, Dom.
Yeah, absolutely. This would be a good time to catch up if you haven't already, because the penultimate episode is coming tomorrow as we record this, and then the finale is going to be next Sunday. And so hopefully we're going to do one more podcast after this week's episode, and then maybe one after the finale, just recapping the whole season. And hopefully we might get to talk to a few of the cast members, do some interviews with them later down the road, but we haven't sorted that out yet. But yeah, definitely go and check that out. It's much better than certainly Big Brother and pretty much anything else that's going to be on TV, with the possible exception of Breaking Bad, which returns to our screen tomorrow, which we are all incredibly excited for. And we're going to be doing some coverage of that. Again, not quite sure what the format of that's going to be or how regular it's going to be, but we definitely want to talk about that at some point.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, the final 8 episodes of Breaking Bad are coming back up. Like Dom said, they were recording this on a Saturday. The season premiere is tomorrow night. And for people who aren't aware, during season 5, part 1 of Breaking Bad, we actually put out 3 podcasts going through all of those episodes in detail, including one with our good buddy Stephen Fishback talking about the season in general. And so for people who watch Breaking Bad, which I'm sure is plenty of you, and if you're not watching Breaking Bad, stop listening to us forever and get Netflix and start watching Breaking Bad, and then check out those podcasts. We just put a post up on the blog reposting the links to where you can find all of that to get caught up before this Sunday's premiere. Yeah, but I mean, Dom, you know, of course we're not here today to be talking about good television. We're here to be talking about terrible television, and BB15 is certainly fitting that mold.
Yeah, and it's sad that talking about it feels more like a chore than anything else, although we're still excited to be doing this. Because, I mean, we've talked about bad seasons of reality shows before, but usually those still bear some resemblance to, like, the underlying concept. Like, a bad season of Survivor is still a season of Survivor, and, you know, Survivor is a fundamentally good show, and we enjoy watching it, so we can kind of look past the flaws of any one season or person or whatever it may be. And usually the way we respond to a bad season is to come on here and talk about it, so that provides some consolation. This season, though, everything is just so bad and so far removed from how we expect Big Brother to be and how we like it to be that we've just had absolutely no motivation to talk about it. So, you know, we're having to use this time to catch up now.
Right, yeah, I mean, we've seen, as we previewed the season and as we were learning more about the MVP twist and how things were playing out, I think we were absolutely right in saying that twist was basically going to do as much damage to the beauty and sanctity of the game as one could possibly really conceive of doing. And I think this is a common theme that we're going to be talking about, is I think the people at fault here are both production as well as casting, because I think, you know, referencing Whodunit again, when you get, like, a great game formula, which Big Brother surely is, which we've seen play out into a great game many, many times, it's very hard to fuck up. But I think BB15, they have absolutely fucked it up. And I'm sure we'll be getting into a lot more details and specifics about why we feel that way as we talk through this. But, it's been a long time since we've been talking about BB15. The last time we were here, we ended off the show debating between whether it would or should be Aaron and Caitlin getting booted, and we're going to be picking up right around there, getting through the Caitlin and Howard boots, I think, pretty quickly today. But as always, we've got plenty to be getting to. We've got plenty of not much interesting strategy, but plenty of stupid-ass controversy to be getting to, which I think is yet another reason why this season's been underwhelming, I should say.
Yeah, it's only been, what, 2 or 3 weeks since we last spoke about it, but it feels like it's been an eternity, and I think the reason for that is it's just been such a drag. Like, there's been nothing. I mean, hopefully it's going to Things are looking up a bit now that the MVP's race is gone, and maybe the game's going to be heating up a bit. But for the first few weeks of the season, it's just been completely miserable, and I'm glad we're finally through that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I feel like there's really nowhere to go but up from this point, but nonetheless, it's certainly not been.
Yeah, I'm sure they can find a way. But
yeah, it's true. I shouldn't undersell Grabner's skill set like that. All right, so I think, you know, we're going to be able to get through the Caitlin and Howard discussion, I think, relatively quickly, and then be getting into more of what we've seen recently. I know that's probably what people are more interested in hearing about. So as mentioned, we were talking when we last left about the idea of the vote between Caitlin and Aaron during the week four round. And I know I was thinking, Dom, just to dive right into this, I was, and I believe you were of the same school of thought, thinking that Aaron would be and should be the better person to be evicting for pretty much the vast majority of the people in the house. However, we ended up seeing Caitlin go out 9-0, but so slightly off there. Granted, I think a unanimous vote one way or the other was by far the most likely outcome, be it to vote out Aaron or Caitlin. But nonetheless, what'd you make of this? Because I felt like there was a lot of value for a lot of people to be leaving Caitlin in the house, and I was honestly quite surprised that not many of them seemed to understand that.
Yeah, well, my thoughts at the time were, if you're in a position of power, so if you have an interest in maintaining the status quo, then I think you want to keep Aaron there, because firstly, she's less likely to win challenges and maybe take a stand against you, although in recent weeks she certainly set up a game in that regard. And also, she's just so polarizing that, you know, you can easily rally the rest of the house against her, and it's going to be much harder for her to try and form some kind of new group that's going to go against you. And, like, conversely, Caitlin's good in challenges, and it's much less controversial. So, you know, if Spencer's trying to offer a deal or something, then that's going to be much more appealing to her, and she's going to be a much more valuable person for him to have on his side. Or it doesn't have to be Spencer, whoever it may be. And I think, you know, I haven't really changed my mind about that. It's been so long ago now that, and I think it's kind of worked a bit differently than we've expected, because Erin, it seems, has kind of fitted more seamlessly into the house than we ever could have imagined, really. She somehow managed to ingratiate herself with basically all of the white people, to put it bluntly. I don't think that's to a greater degree than Caitlin would have done, but like that certainly hasn't turned out to be a negative for her, necessarily. Maybe this isn't something we could have said as comfortably before the double eviction, but she's been much better in challenges in recent weeks, and you know, we saw that very recently, like winning two in a row on the same night and really doing what the majority of the house wanted. And it felt like, yeah, and I think it's illustrative of that back in week two and then a bit later, Erin really needed to win competitions almost just like as an immunity challenge, just to keep herself in the house, whereas here she was actively upset about having to win that competition because she was in such a good spot that she knew that this could only fuck it up. It couldn't make anything better for her.
Right, yeah, oh, definitely. I you know, plenty, I'm sure, to be talking about with Aaron, as she's been head of household twice since we've last talked. A lot going on with Aaron's game, a lot going on, a lot of considerations to be making as far as Aaron's shots to be winning. I think, just to kind of backtrack a little bit in the Caitlin versus Aaron thing, for me, I was... you make some very good points about why the people who are kind of calling the shots and trying to maintain the status quo would want to be keeping Aaron in. I was thinking more the people who are the floaters that would want to be maintaining the status quo and trying to not so much stir the pot and maintain their own pretty solid positions without having to declare any allegiances would perhaps want to keep Aaron in, because if Caitlin stays in, it's going to be like with the big selling point, I think, when I was talking about why vote Aaron out over Caitlin, is that Caitlin's going to be a presence in the house, and she's good at the challenges. She's proven that. Not a lot of people are trusting her. And so, first of all, her loyalty is going to have to go somewhere. And second of all, if that place is not to you, she's then going to draw a pretty big target on wherever that loyalty ends up going. So one way or the other, you're going to either get a great ally who's playing to compete for you, or you're going to get a big target. So if you're one of the people kind of dictating the house, I don't feel like that's an overly risky proposition for you either way. So for the floaters, that's why I was more seeing Aaron staying based on their best interest. But I think we've seen, honestly, and this is a theme I'm sure we're going to be returning to, is that Helen and Amanda are really just dictating every single week of this gameplay. And that's, I think, basically what happened with why Caitlin went and why Aaron stayed, as we kind of roll through this a bit, which is that Aaron swore her loyalty basically to Helen and said, you know, if you keep me, I'll either throw the HOH or I'll let you, you know, if you decide that you'd like for me to participate and try to win, in the event that I win, I will put up your nominations. And so I honestly think the ultimate reason that we saw Aaron end up stay so securely.
Yeah, one crucial factor in determining the outcome, which I think we have to mention, at least in passing, is this, I'm not even sure what to call it, this kind of deal, maybe, or at least this conversation that took place between Howard, Spencer, Judd, Caitlin, and Gina Marie, if I'm remembering all this correctly, where somebody at some point proposed, if not a rigid Final Four or Final Five deal, at least them teaming up in the foreseeable future to move against the rest of the house. And this information got relayed back to Andy and Helen, and that basically switched the target from Aaron, who seemed like the lot to go at that point, to Caitlin. And it's particularly weird given Judd's involvement, because as a judge this week, as someone who had the ears of the other people in power, Judd basically got to choose which one of them went home, and by doing this, he sealed Caitlin's fate here. And I'm not quite sure what he was thinking, because it seemed like Caitlin would have been the better ally for him and everyone he might be aligned with to have. So I'm not sure. Although I will say, I think future weeks have shown that Judd maybe not as strong a thinker as you might have wanted him to be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Judd was someone that I've been very high on since the beginning of the season. I believe I described him preseason as the only sure thing in the entire cast. But I feel like Judd was playing a great game up until winning that HOH. And we talked, I think, you know, last time that we spoke more about the merits of, honestly, the lack of merit for Judd winning that HOH. And I think that's a big reason why he's no longer in the house, at least for now. But yeah, this whole deal that you're talking about between Caitlin, Gina Marie, Judd, Howard, Spencer was really like all of the people on the bottom kind of recognizing that they were on the bottom and trying to do something about it. But like what we've seen all season long is that there's really no such thing as a secret in the BB15 house. Someone's going to tell someone else. And if Andy ever finds out, and it's quite often that Andy's going to be finding out because he's all over the place in the house, everybody's going to know really quickly. Like, anything that happens in this house is pretty quickly going to become national news to everyone else in the house.
Yeah, and what I was particularly curious about it is that it seems like this would have been a sensible thing for Judd to jump on board with if he had wanted to. Like, you know, I don't think anyone was really coming after him at that point, so if he wanted to stick with the plan, then, you know, he could have done that and it wouldn't be any worse off for it. But this is something which he could have at least kept as an option. Yeah, so it feels like keeping Caitlin here would have given him an additional option to future weeks without drawing suspicion to him, because, like, if he's entertaining for Aaron to go, no one's going to be upset about that, and that's what they'd all plan to do anyway, so there's no reason to think that Judd's doing anything better.
Yeah, and the other thing for me is right around this time was where we saw the beginning of the Judd and Jesse relationship really beginning to form, and Jesse's name was not being, you know, in that group of five. Jesse wasn't there, and I was kind of perhaps unfairly doing the math that Judd really, if he's so inclined, could have basically full control over what Jesse does. And maybe that's unfair again, but when you have that group of five and then hopefully Jesse willing to do whatever for you, that could be a very strong movement going forward, especially when the rest of the house already seems on board to boot Aaron. So I definitely am hearing what you're saying, which is that yet again, I feel like keeping Caitlin there, there was a lot of merit to that when you could quite easily boot Aaron.
Yeah, also, if Judd's going to win HOH at the week, and, you know, you said you think it's a bad idea, I don't think it was so bad, but I feel like if you're going to do that, you have to be willing to capitalize on that for all that it's worth. And somehow, Judd managed to come out of that week not having gained the trust of Aaron, even though he was, in theory, responsible for keeping her there. So, like, because, yeah, sure, he nominated her, but I think she understands that he had to do that, because otherwise he would just have the target shifted to him in future weeks. So, you know, he should at least have been able to extract some kind of concession, understanding, whatever, from whichever one of them he kept there. And maybe that would have been more possible if he kept Caitlin, and that would have been an argument for keeping her instead.
Right. It's very rare that I'm praising Dani Donato's gameplay, but I think she absolutely, her second time around, understood this concept. And actually, I have a couple Donato's things, one from BB8, one from BB13, where Danielle would say, basically, whatever move I'm making in this game, even if it's automatic for me, people need to understand, like, I'm going to get a favor back from whoever I'm keeping safe, even though I would be doing it anyway. And the other thing that I think contributed to why Aaron stayed is something I've always given the Donatos a ton of credit for that I can't believe we don't see more often, which is, as I referenced earlier, Helen's deal with Aaron just before the live show. I think it was 5 hours before the live show. But I think one of the strongest tactics we've seen, it maybe even in BB history, is I'm spacing now on who they. I think it was the Jessica boot during BB8 where Jamaica was also up on the block just before the live show, and they knew they were keeping Jamaica. But they led her to believe the entire week that she was going to go. So just before the live show, they could go and basically say, we will keep you if you promise any competition you win basically is ours. You do what we say, even knowing full well that they're going to keep her, but getting a favor out of it.
Yeah, that's not really something I associate with Diane Donato, of all people, but you apparently have a clearer memory of that than I do, so I can defer to you on that one, I guess.
It was Dick who was...
Well, that makes sense then, yeah.
Yes, sorry, I meant to be more clear about that, I'm sorry. Nonetheless, you know, either way, I think it's a very strong idea, which is make someone feel like they're on the ropes, and then they're, like Joe last season we saw, when he felt like he was on the ropes, just swore legitimate up and down loyalty to Shane for keeping him safe. And I think that was a very big thing for Shane going forward in the game. I think had things played out differently, Joe definitely would have stepped in front of a moving bus for Shane sometime.
And I really wish he had, because otherwise he would have listened to him all season.
And nonetheless, Caitlin ends up going here, whether we liked it or not. I was somewhat surprised, just because I thought there was so much merit in booting Aaron comparatively.
Yeah, and worth pointing out here, although I think we would all agree that Caitlin got into the wrong crowd and maybe didn't behave in a way that she would have been proud of, I think she's handled herself very well post-show. She's basically just been very contrite and said, look, I realize I fucked up, I made a few mistakes, but she's shown a lot more maturity than I think we would have expected from her just based on the first 4 or 5 weeks, however long it was.
Yeah, I haven't stayed totally focused on Caitlin ever since she's left the house. I listened to her exit interview on Rob Has a Podcast, and I definitely got that general vibe. And it's more, back when she was in the house, we were saying, I think Caitlin, in a season where she wasn't lumped in socially and politically with the Jeremy and Aaron and Gina Marie and that typically, younger and quite honestly, like, stupider crowd, I think she could have had a lot more chances to be a big player in a different season. I hesitate to say I was sorry to see her go. I don't know that, even if she stayed, she would have been a big player this season. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right that at least compared to how Jeremy has handled himself and how one would presume Gina Marie and Aaron would respond to the criticism they'd be faced with if leaving the house pre-jury, Caitlin definitely, at least relatively speaking, impressed me.
I mean, Jeremy hasn't been that bad, right? I mean, in relative terms.
For him, right.
But yeah, okay. He's been very un-Jeremy-like in all of his post-game stuff, from what I can tell, at least.
Yeah, he's at least under, like, even his acknowledging that, yeah, I did a couple of things and said some things that I really shouldn't have said, it was more than I was expecting.
Yeah, and incidentally, not to get into this too much, but I think the recognition on the part of production that Aaron and Jeremy wouldn't be quite so remorseful might be one of the reasons why they shifted to a 9-person jury this year, just because I think going into the double eviction, given that they didn't have time to, prepare the audience or to at least do damage control in advance, they didn't want to run the risk of, let's say, Aaron gets evicted, or even, let's say, Amanda or potentially Spencer. They didn't want to have to run the risk of not being able to handle the fallout from their comments once they leave the house. Like, they don't want a situation where Aaron walks out the door and the audience is just, like, completely silent or booing her or whatever. They want to be able to keep a tight lid on that as possible. But, yeah, so one final thing on this. I can understand from CBS's perspective why they wouldn't want to take the risk. I say take the risk in scare quotes, but I don't think it should be a risk if they handle it properly. But I understand why they wouldn't want to take the risk of exposing Aaron to, firstly, a live studio audience, and secondly, force her to handle all of the backlash that she's inevitably going to get right now instead of in 2 months' time when the show ends, when maybe it's died down a bit and she's going to be able to handle it a bit better. But at the same time, I feel like, given that CBS casts people every season specifically to provide drama, maybe not Aaron, but certainly Jeremy, Gina Marie, and various other people, I don't see how most of the drama that they cast those people for, so which usually amounts to people yelling at each other over completely inconsequential bullshit, is somehow supposed to be less edifying for the franchise than Aaron being confronted about her remarks by someone of a different ethnic background on live on national TV, which hopefully would be an educational experience, if not for her, then certainly at least for some of the audience. But I don't see why that necessarily has to be a bad thing for the show. Like, I understand that maybe they weren't expecting this from Aaron when they cast her, and I certainly hope they weren't, because if they were, then casting her was probably irresponsible in the first place, although we can maybe debate that another time. But given that this is the case, like, they've basically made their bed, and I think they should be willing to lie in it.
not only should they be willing to line it, I can't believe they're not, and I feel like they have kind of taken some active measures to try to force that dynamic to happen pre-jury so that Julie can sit and grill Aaron about everything. You know, of course, that had Aaron gone out anytime soon after the whole racism thing was really at its apex, that would have been the only real talking point as far as anyone was concerned regarding an Aaron boot. Certainly with Julie there interviewing her immediately after it happened.
Yeah. Part of me wonders to what degree the response to all of this was outside of their control, because let's say Amanda had gone during the double eviction. Even though Amanda, by this point, has said almost as much stupid shit as Aaron. Like, she has this whole clip reel on YouTube now devoted to all the stupid and bigoted shit she, all the stupid and bigoted stuff she said and done. I'm not sure that the focus of their conversation would have been her remarks. It would have been her relationship with McRae, or why she was so aggressive with people, or like, it wouldn't have been framed in terms of her racism or all the other nasty qualities she displayed.
Right, but I mean, that's because she's best friends with Alison Grodner, right?
Well, yeah, way to bear the lead. You see what I mean. Like, I think maybe it's just because Aaron was the first to go through that process, but.
Aaron was the one drawing all the headlines, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe had the situation been reversed and Amanda was saying the stuff first, which she was partly. Like, if you think back to the original bigotry supercar, which has now been circulating wildly, Amanda played a pretty significant part in that. She was never free or innocent from criticism at any point. But this somehow all become centered around Aaron. Like, let's say Spencer gets evicted in a week or 2 weeks from now, nothing he says is going to be brought up, I'm pretty sure. Like, his edit has and will continue to be completely whitewashed.
Right, whereas Amanda's has definitely been picking up as far as the, hey, maybe we don't like Amanda so much anymore. And certainly America has been responding to that by putting her up on the block the last couple of weeks that they were able to do so.
Yeah, and I think also CBS has been framing it in the edited episodes as, like, a separate thing about racism, whereas when they show Amanda or GM just being completely aggressive towards Candace, it's not framed in those terms. It's presented as, well, there is this drama which led to these consequences, and so we have to give you the backstory to that, which just happened to involve Candace being called Shaniqua again for somehow, like, the third or fourth time in a week. It's not like they took time out of an episode to focus on all the stupid shit that's being said.
Right. Well, I think what ended up, in my own theory, and I'm perhaps misinformed or just outright wrong about this, but I think given the way we've seen both the MVP, you know, America becoming MVP for 3 weeks in a row, and the way that they edited the show during the early weeks, is that they were really pinning this on Aaron and saying this is the person to be focusing your attention on as it pertains to all the controversy within the house, which justifiably so during the first couple of weeks. But at this point, that certainly has died down. The disdain for Aaron among the viewing public. I know Aaron's been, like, rising pretty substantially in the general, like, popularity rankings on certain message boards. Like Joker's updates, I don't think she's even in, like, the bottom three or four at this point for general popularity. And I think they had a pretty bad stroke of luck as far as Aaron, as we'll be getting to, has been winning these HOHs when otherwise she probably would have been going up as America's nominee. And I think that's actually a decent, you know, plenty more to be talking about as we talk about all of this controversy and production's responses. But I think this is a good way to transition into week five, which is, once again, I was of the opinion that the MVP Swiss may dissolve after we saw Caitlin get booted. Now that we were down to 12 people, that's where they generally like to reset and have an endurance comp. Not the case this season, where America was yet again going to be the MVP. And I feel like this was as a combination of the way they edited the first four rounds and the way that they continued this MVP twist with America being the one to vote. I have no reservations about saying this is a very deliberate attempt to get Aaron up on the block, to give America some kind of vindication and perhaps get Aaron out of the house, get this, you know, PR cancer out of the house as far as production's concerned, probably. However, they do the crapshoot HOH contest, and Aaron gets a perfect score and is immune from the from eviction that week, and is going to be the new HOH. And so, some very, you know, an exciting result. And I think this was the beginning. I shouldn't say exciting. It was more clearly not what production had in mind, which for me is exciting. And I think it's the beginning of a trend that has been definitely growing in popularity the whole root for Erin, because pretty much no one else is a ton of fun to be rooting for, and her presence in the house is clearly infuriating Alison Grodner Club. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, people say that, but I'm not so sure that production is all that unhappy with this turn of events, because, to put it frankly, this controversy means ratings, and it means publicity, and they seem to be from the school of thought that all publicity is good publicity. So it's kind of scary that a casting choice which was at best questionable, although, you know, maybe it was an inspired casting choice, who knows, has somehow led to a situation where either outcome, you know, America feeling vindication of getting to nominate and evict Erin, or Erin staying in the game and continuing to cause drama, either outcome is going to turn out well for the franchise, and I'm not quite sure how that happened. It's kind of disturbing that it is.
Right, yeah, no, and I think it's much like we saw during the transition between the first and second rounds of play, which is the show switched from its Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday schedule back to the standard Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, because I think they were anticipating the ratings being high because this controversy was, causing so much publicity, and I think it's along the same lines. There's no such thing as bad publicity as far as ratings are concerned. And I think that's the major problem we take with Grodner and whoever else is that they clearly are have turned what was once a beautiful game into their own idea of how best to garner ratings. And I think we not only take issue with how they've gone about doing that, but just the general concept in principle. But certainly, there really is no bad outcome for them there. Like you said, it's either America gets the blood on their hands and gets to be the deciding force in why Erin gets evicted and they get that aforementioned vindication, or Erin sticks around and we get, hey, more controversy and more people talking about Big Brother. Yeah, let's get into week 5, actually, because Erin, as mentioned, is the HOH, and she made that deal with Helen, saying that if she were to go on to become this HOH, she would do what Helen wanted. And she ends up actually going through with that and does put up Howard and Spencer. And I'm actually curious what you thought about this, because in Erin's position, where she really doesn't have any allies and she's pretty much viewed as toxic within the house, do you like this idea that she ended up going with, which is doing what Helen said after Helen had just basically spared her from eviction?
Yeah, well, okay. I'm sure Helen would have liked Erin to think, and apparently she does think that Helen was the one who saved her, but in reality, I'm sure it was a lot more complex than that, and, no, I don't think that Erin, well, apparently she did, but I don't think she should have felt indebted to Helen anyway, even leaving aside the fact that in a game like this, she should never feel indebted to anyone. I can see, obviously, why Erin wanted to do this. Like, she's been on the outs for, like, 4 or 5 weeks. It must be so tempting to at least have this possibility that you could be just part of the majority and no one would be coming after you and things would be fine for you. At the same time, though, it feels like this is just being set up for her being dragged along for a few weeks until she's no longer useful and then just being cut in, like, 7th or 6th or some spot around there where it's like, she's not really effective in the game, but she's good in challenges and she could act as a spoiler for people's endgame plans, so there's no real reason to keep her. Whereas, especially since if she goes along with Helen, then she's splitting up Howard and Spencer. And Howard and Spencer as a pair is the one thing or the one group that you can maybe use as a bigger target than yourself, as like a buffer. Especially since if Erin does this and goes along with Helen, then what Helen wants her to do is break up Howard and Spencer. And if she does that, then Howard and Spencer as a pair, firstly, are very good to have on your side because, that if the other side happens to be an HOH, no matter what, they're coming for them before they're coming for you. But also, they're going to be a good thing they're going to be a good unit that you can point to later down the road as a pair that needs to be split up once hopefully your side of the house gains control. So once she agrees to split up Helen and Spencer, she's basically committing to staying to that group as long as she can. Like, she can't really flip over at that point.
Right, and I think you hit on what I would say is the underlying most important principle, which is if you're Erin here and you don't really have any allies or anything going for you, it's definitely tempting. And I think she made some good cases for why go with just what the house wants. But at the same time, in doing so, you're really just putting the blood on your hands in an effort to orchestrate the majority's most desired boot. And we'll definitely be getting into whether or not that should have been the desired boot for the majority. But nonetheless, it's not like in doing so, you're then putting yourself, no one's changing their minds or changing their end game to include you now that you're doing that. They're just basically using you, which is, I feel like they've been pretty upfront with the entire time. Like Helen saying, you know, if you go on to win this, this is who I feel like you should, who, if we're going to keep you, you should be putting up. It's obviously not because Helen wants to work with you and now take you to the final two. It's because that's what best suits Helen's game without getting any blood on her own hands.
Yeah, and to some extent, although obviously it's easy to say this with the benefit of hindsight, it seems like that position of safety was going to be not guaranteed, but at least very likely for her, no matter what, as long as either her or Caitlyn went. Like, whichever one of them survived was going to be in a very good spot going forward, because, like, let's say she doesn't go with Helen and she puts up, let's say, Helen and Andy, one of them goes home, then McCrae and Amanda are going after Howard and Spencer, Howard and Spencer are going after McCrae and Amanda, and no one really, I mean, I guess Candace might want to come after you, or Jesse, or, but that's a situation of their own design. Like, that's not, like, that's their fault. It's not any flaw of the strategy, necessarily. And I think, in any case, like, Howard might be able to act as a calming influence on Candace, and maybe keep her in line. So it's not clear to me who else would really want to put up Aaron in that spot.
Well, I think the temptation for going with what the house wants, which is, you know, is saying basically going with what Helen wants, is that you still have to deal with this MVP twist. And I think that degree of uncertainty ends up playing a pretty major role in making this decision. Like, I think if Aaron won this HOH and only had to put up two people and knew that she would be solely in control of the nominees and the renom in the event that someone needed to be replaced, there are definitely much different considerations to be making. But with the MVP twist, where, you know, especially after a week where no one knows who even the MVP is, there's a lot to be concerned about. And I understand that impulse and that desire to kind of just stay under the radar and do what the most people want you to do.
Yeah, and that's the one big thing which changes everything, and which is the biggest argument against the argument I just gave. And we'll be getting into this later when we talk about the MVP twist as a whole. But, like, this is one of the main reasons why it might act as a stifling influence upon gameplay, because, you know, if someone in a minority gets it, then that's basically the best case scenario for entertainment's sake with the MVP. Like, if someone in the majority gets it, then it makes things even less likely to get shaken up. Because let's say someone in the minority wins HOH, and, like, typically that's the scenario that you most root for as a viewer for entertainment's sake, because things are most likely to get shaken up and it's not going to be another boring week. That's much less likely as long as the MVP twist is in place, because as long as that person who wins HOH isn't so far gone that it doesn't matter what they do because they're just going to be out next week anyway, then they're going to have an incentive to play safe, because if they try and go after the majority and someone in the majority has MVP, then they're just going to nominate someone in the minority, and, you know, that person's going to go, and the person who just took a shot at the majority has completely fucked themselves. So, you know.
Right. I think it's a great illustration of why what we've been saying, even since preseason, of how the MVP just does such substantial damage to the game as it should be, as it was designed and as it should be played out, which is that if there's a third nomination that the HOH can't control, the metric for deciding who gets to make it is unclear, and they're able to remain anonymous, that's not Big Brother. Quite honestly, as far as I'm concerned, that's an entirely different game, and I think that's such a prevalent force in making your decisions when you are HOH, knowing that there's going to be that force that you have to act against. Not necessarily act against, you know, back when we knew Alyssa was going to be winning it every week or whatever. But once it starts getting non-claimed, or once America gets to start voting, they, you know, even if they don't know that from within the house, that's definitely something you have to be very concerned with, and is a very real thing that could screw you over basically no matter what you do as HOH. And it really does make the HOH comp more just about immunity than any actual power.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke before the season about how the MVP twist might make things more interesting, but that, I guess that assumed a lot of things which were never really going to come to pass given the current format and casting for Big Brother. Like, this, the MVP twist sounds like the kind of thing where if it's implemented in some kind of, like, online Big Brother simulation somehow, then, you know, it works and everyone likes it. But given the actual constraints of the actual show, it's just never going to realistically pan out well for the audience.
Right, I mean, in capable and ethical hands, I think the MVP could have been great. Because we were talking before we actually knew the details of the MVP in our season preview podcast about, hey, three people go up and then there's a veto competition. If the circumstance is such that veto must be used, and then only two of the three initial nominees will always be going to the vote on Thursday night, there's no backdooring, that could be a brilliant facet to the game as far as I'm concerned. I think it could really add a lot of complexity and so forth. But when you factor, you know, when you end up approaching MVP and the way that the twist is going to be implemented, the way that production ended up doing so, you just remove any element of improving the game and drastically reduce both the merits and inclination to actually play the game very actively. And I think this whole season has been a fallout of that, which is why we're seeing so much groupthink and so many sheep, basically. Yeah. All right. So let's get further into week five now. Amanda ends up going up by America's vote as the MVP nomination. And Amanda is someone I'm sure we're going to be talking plenty about, but I feel like this was really the beginning of the end because Amanda does not handle this nomination well. She's not excited remotely about the prospect of being up on the block, even if she feels like she's got all of the votes to keep her and so forth within the House for sure. She's, you know, just that level of paranoia. It's almost, I felt like, I know I've taken some criticism, at least specifically of Danielle Reyes, just an irrational fear of being on the block. And I think Amanda is someone, despite being a well-recognized power player within the House, someone who probably doesn't have to be concerned at this point so much about being on the block. So we end up, all right, we can just kind of be blasting through here and get to the veto competition, unless you have anything else to add.
Okay. Well, here's what gets me about Amanda being nominated, because you spoke earlier about how the reception towards Erin has slowly been, like, defrosted over the past few weeks, where, like, she's certainly not popular or fan favorite by any means, but, like, the entirely justified, I think, hatred of her that we had originally has kind of died down a bit, and she's slowly rising in popularity. Firstly, that's just absurd on the face of it, as if the fact that she said racist things 2 weeks ago instead of now somehow makes them any better, or, like, as if she suddenly hasn't said them anymore. But secondly, it's like, I can understand if that justification for nominating someone, that you think that they've said and done things which are so, like, morally outrageous that they don't deserve to be in the House anymore, I can understand that being used as a reason for nominating Amanda, who is challenging Erin for the title of most vile person this season, given her combined body of work over the past few weeks. But that's not even why they did it. They nominated Amanda because, I don't know, she got into a fight with Alyssa 3 weeks ago. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And that's starting to make me question, actually, whether the original opposition to Erin was actually motivated by racism or not, or whether it was just she was on the other side of the House from Alyssa and she's the most vocal cheerleader for that side, so therefore let's use racism as a pretense for nominating her, when in fact it's, you know, whatever bizarre justification they have that makes sense only in their own minds.
Yeah, I think this is more interesting during the week six America's nomination, just because Erin was also a candidate there. And so, you know, in this first week, or second week, I suppose, now we're in, where America's getting to nominate and they ended up choosing Amanda instead of erroneously voting for the fan favorite Alyssa, as they did the first time they were given that opportunity. When both Erin and Amanda are on the block, and Amanda is on the America's vote block, so to speak, and Amanda is the one who ends up getting the majority of the votes, I think that's much more interesting than when Erin has the immunity herself. But at the same time, like, I'm struggling to even know what to make of the situation, because I don't know how much it has to do with opposition to Alyssa, other as it compares to relatively Amanda's just kind of growing presence within the game, her, you know, becoming known as Demanda and really just dictating, or at least attempting to dictate as much as possible, where when Erin isn't going to be someone who's a consideration for America to nominate, as she won't be when she's HOH in this instance, and people know better at this point than to vote to just be hammering Alyssa for MVP votes. Granted, there is a small but vocal anti-Alyssa crowd. It's interesting to me that Amanda is the person who kind of gets those default votes and does get put up on the block by America back-to-back weeks, just because she's, I much more so than opposition to Alyssa, just being a kind of a known presence who inevitably is going to alienate some percentage of the viewer base, I would say. I think that's a much more interesting concept, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's like, given that MVP is a vote for, okay, given that when America is MVP, then they're voting to nominate someone who is their least favorite rather than actively casting votes to, like, bestow power upon a favorite, then given that whoever you're a fan of, Amanda has probably got into a fight with them at some point, yeah. So she's probably done something to alienate you. So, like, it's entirely understandable that Amanda would go up, and maybe it's a sign of her lack of self-awareness that she seems to be completely shocked that she would go up, as if, like, the idea that America might put her up just never seemed to ever even occur to her. But I was listening to Eric Stein on Rob Has a Podcast yesterday, and if you haven't listened to that, go back and check it out. It's, you know, Eric Stein rarely makes appearances on these shows, but when he does, he's very, very good. And he was making the point that, you know, when you're in the Big Brother house or like on any show, everyone has their own story. And in Amanda's mind, like, why would America nominate her? Because, you know, she's the one in control of the house. She's evicting the people that people want to see gone. She's getting into fights with people who are, you know, have said and done these stupid things. I can quite easily see why it wouldn't make sense to her that America would nominate her.
Yeah, no, there's that great scene that we saw, I don't remember which episode it was in, where she's like, yeah, but if America's the MVP, I would never be the one they would put up. Like, who doesn't like what I'm doing in this house? And McCray's like, yeah, sure. Like, I think, and this is, I can't believe McCray's name hasn't come up before, because I think he's been more in tune with the general goings-on than Amanda has. But you're right, that in her own mind, she can't even conceive of why someone within the house, or if America is the MVP outside of the house, would either put her up knowing she has such support within the house, or would dislike her enough to put her up.
And it's interesting that I haven't watched the live feeds very much, so maybe I'm off base with this, but it's interesting that the fact that Alyssa isn't MVP anymore just never seemed to cause any confusion.
Well, like, it never seemed to cause any confusion with anyone but Alyssa.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's like before, when America was voting to make someone MVP, you know, Alyssa won it 3 times in a row, and then sure, they had the off week where I think everyone correctly was MVP. But going into the following week, it's either going to be America, in which case, like, Amanda shouldn't be surprised that America's nominating her, given that America would be MVP, or it's going to be a contestant, in which case, why wouldn't it just go back to being Alyssa?
Yeah, I think that's the idea behind what we were talking about. If this is really like high level players or even capable players, there's going to be a lot of claiming and counterclaiming, or just staying quiet and not claiming anything if you are in fact the MVP. But when we see Alyssa claim it the first 3 weeks and then say, I didn't get it, week four and beyond there, I think it definitely adds, at least in theory, and not so much in practice, but it should be adding an entirely different level of gameplay.
Yeah, see, that's an argument that I made preseason, but upon further thought, I'm not sure that it actually holds up, because the type of people that would be most likely to use it in all of these creative ways that we'd like to see are precisely the type of people who are least likely to want to do so, because they won't need to. Like, as an example, let's say you were listing all the house guests in this season in terms of their gameplay ability, and so you would say that the best players in this house are McCray and Andy, presumably?
Without question, yes.
Yeah, and that's not saying much, but bear with me on this. So, let's say McCray or Andy were to get MVP. Now, you might expect that they would be the ones best suited to use it to shake things up, but they don't need to, because precisely by virtue of the fact that they're so good at the game, they have been able to ingratiate themselves with the majority to an extent that they have no reason to possibly want to shake things up anymore.
Like, right.
But for either of them, the route to the end that makes the most sense is to just maintain the status quo with the least, like, dynamic change as possible. Right? They just want to coast to the end with the people that they're currently aligned with. They have no reason to want to use it in such a way that people might start to cotton on to how powerful they're getting.
Right. I think an interesting, or maybe not even interesting, but a good parallel is when we were talking either last time or the time before about the idea of constructing a favorable jury versus constructing a favorable endgame. If you're someone who is taking the time to consider and is able to pull off constructing your most favorable jury, you're probably not the type of person who's going to need that favorable jury anyway. Like, you're going to be doing pretty well, generally speaking, no matter what. And so it's another one of those things where it's like, the people who should be considering these kind of factors are the ones who are just never going to be considering the factors.
Yeah, like, if you think about the two most common general cases where someone gets MVP, if the MVP is in the minority, then it's just not going to matter, right? Because if they didn't go home, then one of their allies does. If they're in the majority, then generally it's just going to be to maintain the majority stranglehold of the house. So in both scenarios, it doesn't really lead to any kind of... So in both scenarios, it's unlikely to lead to any kind of shake-up in the way that everyone would want to see.
Right, and I think that's honestly by design. Like, I think the MVP twist, if your production was very well thought out as far as, hey, we're not going to get a lot of mix-ups here. We're going to get the least popular people out of here and the majority alliance and the people who are playing well and understand that Alyssa's going to be MVP every week. You're going to keep Alyssa safe so she can keep winning MVP for them, and HOH is irrelevant. Yeah. All right, so let's get into this next boot, because those Howard, Spencer, and Amanda are the nominees. Spencer ends up winning that old-school veto puzzle game and pulls himself off the block. Candace ends up going up as the replacement nominee. I think this is pretty straightforward as far as, they're pretty clearly she's close with Howard, and if Howard's going to be the target, which I think he is, just when Queen Amanda is getting to call all of the shots, Candace is very logical replacement nominee. Now, I want to talk about, obviously we see Howard end up going here. Did you like this decision to be booting Howard for the most people in the house?
Well, as is often the case with these things, I don't think it really makes sense to ask if it makes sense for most people in the house, because everyone has their own interest in that. It may sound flippant and like I'm just being pedantic, but I think here, more so than in most other cases, like, booting Howard makes a lot of sense for some people and not for others. Like, I think for, let's say, McCray and Amanda, they, despite Amanda's seemingly inexplicable desire to get Howard out that she's had for the past 4 weeks now, I think they should want Howard and Spencer there, because if pairs are being seen as threats that need to be broken up, then at some point that same judgment is going to be made about McCray and Amanda. And as long as they can keep Howard and Spencer, who for a good reason have been labelled by various bloggers and things as the Shady Fucks Alliance, if you manage to keep them in the house, then there's always going to be a bigger target than you that you're not currently aligned with, if you're Helen or Andy or Jod or anyone in that group. So, yeah, paradoxically, the people angling most for them to go are precisely the people who should most want to keep them there. At least as I see it, you know, maybe there are things in the house I'm not seeing that frustrate that, but I don't know.
Right, I think this is the big... this is very interesting to me, I guess is the way to put it, where that... Amanda C. and Helen seem to be calling all of the shots, and it shouldn't really be working, but for some reason it is. And so along those same lines, like, Howard definitely, as far as I'm concerned, if I was Amanda or McCray, I would be doing everything I could to keep Howard. Like, Howard would be one of the last people I would want to be booting, even with full knowledge that he may be coming after us, just because you want, like you said, you want to keep those other people in as buffers, which is a concept that we've talked about before and will surely be coming up again over the course of this season, which is if you leave in Howard and Spencer as a pair or Howard and Candace as a pair, that's yet another power couple that other people will probably be targeting before you, and you want to keep the limelight off of yourself for as long as possible until you hit the middle and end game where you can start trying to just rattle off competitions. And in booting Howard, you're leaving in, like we talked about all the way back the last time we spoke, which was right after Jeremy got evicted, you don't want to be doing that. Like, I'm always of the school of thought that you should be anticipating that other people are going to be acting rationally, and much more so than you should be anticipating that you can mind fuck them into not acting in their own best interest when they otherwise could. And so, I long story short, I definitely don't think Howard was, the abstract sense, a good boot here for both McCray and Amanda, or Helen, Andy, and Alyssa. Like, when you boot Howard, you remove two possible power couples and put yourself at the forefront.
Yeah, I was going to say that it might make more sense with someone like Judd, or someone in Judd's position, given that he seems to be the only one who really fits that mold, at least. But on further thought, like, at some point, Judd is going to need to strike against McCray and Amanda, or Helen, Alyssa, and Andy. And when he needs to do that, surely it's better to have some kind of unified team in the form of Howard and Spencer or Howard and Candace rather than Spencer and Candace, who not only are not aligned, but actively at each other's throats.
Right, no, in Judd's position, I'm trying to keep in as many other power couples as possible to just keep all of those buffers in front of me and make sure that other people, no matter who wins HOH, have other priorities that are much bigger and much more pressing issues than I myself, Judd, am.
Yeah, and so far this analysis has left aside the fact that Howard himself doesn't seem to be particularly threatening in any way. Like, people have spoken about how he might be good in competitions, and he said himself he's been throwing some of them, but even if he had been trying, when he was on the block, he said he wasn't able to win veto. When it looked like he was going to be on the block and he had a reason to try, he wasn't able to win veto. So, I'm not sure that he was really the challenge beast that people pegged him out to be. in that respect, he kind of reminds me of, like, James from Survivor, where it's like, you look at him, and he's big, and Hulkin's got muscles, and you think, well, this guy's clearly a challenge piece, but in any challenge which doesn't involve just sheer physical strength, he's not going to be particularly good. And strategically, like, you know, Howard tried to make things happen, and he failed at it. So, you know, so if you're just asking the question, who's the most threatening player, it's probably not Howard. And if you're looking for allies, Howard seems like the perfect guy, because even though he might not be winning competitions for you, he seems loyal to a fault. So,
right.
You know, if you look at it in those terms, the only people who might want Howard gone are the people for whom it really doesn't matter what they do, like Jesse or Gene and Marie or people like that, where the idea of what makes sense for them never even comes up because they're not winning, so who cares?
Right, and in, honestly, in hearing more of Howard once he was on the block trying to save himself with all of those very weird and ambiguous kind of, like, rants about talking to whoever and kind of not really making a ton of sense, something I'm very familiar with myself, yeah. where I wouldn't over, like, that would definitely signal to me, I don't have a ton to be concerned about as far as him talking other people into acting out of their own best interests is concerned. And simultaneously, because of those big muscles and because of everything, and all of the general, like, propaganda artistry being slung in Howard's direction, keeping him around, like, we've just to hit on it again, he's, as long as he's there, he's going to be a big threat, at which we have recognized as not actually a big threat, and that's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and let's be clear, we're not entirely laying the blame for this on non-Howard people. Like, Howard certainly brought a lot of this on himself. Like,
oh,
yes. His tendency to speak in wannabe copypasta certainly didn't help him at any point.
No, yeah, he definitely did bring at least partially some of this on himself. But at the same time, I just can't shake that I would be doing my damnedest to keep Howard in there if I'm pretty much anyone in the house, and with the exception of the people you mentioned, like Jesse or Gina Marie, where it doesn't really matter what they do. Yeah, so Howard ends up going here. I personally was upset to see Howard go. He was one of my favorite guys for the first few weeks. I definitely fell off the Howard bandwagon as time progressed, but nonetheless, compared to the rest of the people in the house, would have much preferred to see Howard stick around for a while. But we move on either way to the Endurance Head of Household competition, which I was very much looking forward to. And this comes down to Gina Marie and McRae, and they're offering each other deals, and they both are happy to let the other person make the nominations. Gina Marie wants her hair dye. McRae ends up falling, and Gina Marie is ready to shake up the snow globe. She is your new HOH, Dom.
Yeah, we spoke earlier about how the existence of the MVP twist might constrain people's options and make them less willing to take a risk. Gina Marie is the type of person for whom the idea of even considering risk of any sort just doesn't matter. Does whatever the fuck she wants and isn't going to listen to anyone.
Yeah, I mean, and not surprisingly, Gina Marie over the course of this week, I think, got probably this season's, at least to date, biggest case of HOH-itis, where she would call people into her room and really ward her power over people and like, hey, I get to make nominees, you guys. You could be in jeopardy here. Terrible Gina Marie impression. Leave that to Rob. Which is fantastic, and it was really interesting to me to see the clear short-sightedness with which this HOH was won. Not that she shouldn't have been winning. I thought she was one of very few people who actually had business being up there until the end, just given what she knows and how little she's capable of processing within the house herself. Granted, hair dye would not be my priority. It would be more immunity and getting some choice people up on the block. But nonetheless, I, first of all, was very excited to see Gina Marie win. I thought this was a very interesting outcome as far as we could really see anything go down here, but definitely did not handle it as I would write up if I were to be writing the HOH for Dummies book. I think also worth mentioning, the first three people who dropped out of this competition ended up drawing from boxes and got either punishments or prizes. Helen ended up getting a barbecue where she got to invite three people, which was later the source of a great conflict. Candace got $5,000, and Spencer got something I want to get into just very quickly. Spencer got a bullhorn, which I thought was, we've seen some dumb punishments, and I feel like they've gotten way out of hand with the unitards, etc. I very much like this. I thought this was both creative and hilarious for a punishment, and effective as a punishment. Like, he really can't be saying anything during those 24 hours that he has to be using the bullhorn. Like, he can't have any kind of private conversations because anyone within 45-foot radius of him can hear it. But so good on them for that punishment. I very much like that. I think this week we could pretty much quickly get through this, which is GM ends up nominating Jesse and Candace, and quite clearly has Candace as their target. I guess, first of all, do you like Gina Marie targeting Candace here so openly?
I mean, no, but again, it's like the question of whether it's good or bad. Like, it's Gina Marie. She's going to do what she wants. It's not going to matter because she's not winning. Like, she is.
Right.
She's here for entertainment's sake, and she's certainly delivered on that front. Although maybe not if you're Candace or black, but beyond that, if you're white like us, then, yeah, she's all the rage. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, it seems so strange to me that Jesse and Candace are seriously considered as, like, big targets that need to be gotten out of the house. Like, that can only ever happen if you're acting emotionally. Like, there's no rational reason to be going after them. The only reason I can think of is if you've antagonized them so much, and apparently she has, that you'd want them gone before a jury. But firstly, apparently that isn't going to work out well for them this season. And secondly, that's, like, if you're in a spot where you have to be thinking like that, then you've already lost the game. There's no real way of getting out of that.
Right, yeah, and I think it's along those same lines that we've been talking about, which is Gina Marie could be conceiving of doing a lot of different things that may or may not be in her own best interest, if she even had a best interest to be pursuing. I still think she's absolutely a cold stone 0% to win this game. It doesn't really matter what she does at any point, and she certainly, even if it did matter, she wouldn't be the type to be putting in that kind of thought. I think Jesse and Candace are nominations at the... that are meant to really just not stir up the pot so much and kind of keep as many people as possible happy with her. And, you know, we saw Amanda and Jesse have that big fight about the barbecue, and Candace was the one she wanted out. As far as entertainment as an HOH goes, I think you hit the nail right on the head, which is, this is the greatest nomination speech I've ever seen, where she's calling Candace a tattletale rat and calling Jesse a flip-flopper, and very much want to give kudos to the editors here, because I think probably for the first time ever, at least the first time I can recall, the musical cues during this speech where they kind of like fade it down so you can hear everyone laughing and have like the fizzled out nomination speech soundtrack was just truly great stuff. And I don't think Gina Marie even begins to understand the cartoonish comedy figure that she actually represents this season.
If you think she even picked up on it at all, do you think she thought they were laughing with her or laughing at her? I'm pretty sure she doesn't think they're laughing at her.
I think Judd's hesitation about, you know, immediately after we saw he and Amanda go in, and he was concerned that everyone was going to hate him because he was just so openly laughing at Gina Marie Durga nomination speech. I don't know who she thought they were laughing at, but I'm sure if anyone could delude themselves into thinking that they weren't laughing at her, it would be Gina Marie.
Yeah, I think you just went completely over her head.
Yeah, okay. So we get America's nomination this week, and it is once again Amanda. We talked about this a little earlier, and I think we'll talk about the idea of America's nominations as we come to a close on the MVP twist down the line. Now, the POV competition itself, I think, is very worth getting into, and this is everybody's favorite, at least mine, and by extension should be everybody's favorite. It's the Yankee swap. I love it. It's always a great time. Judd and Spencer get drawn to play. And I think this is one of the more interesting competitions every single year. So let's get into this, unless you have anything else before.
Well, it's mainly interesting because every time they do it, you have one person who finishes like in the middle of the pack who optimistically thinks that by giving up like $5,000 or like a trip to Barbados or whatever fantastic thing they won and trading for the veto, that they're somehow actually going to get to keep the veto, which never ceases to amaze me, but...
Right. The only reason to ever trade for the veto, if you don't come in probably the top two, and theoretically speaking, unless you come in first place, is if you got a punishment and you are just hoping that the right number of people are left that may not take the veto from you. But yeah, if you're coming in fifth, sixth, fourth, third place, you're going to have a bad time as it pertains to winning this veto itself. So let's get into the specifics of this competition.
Now, you contrast that with Spencer. Now, Spencer knows what's up here. Like, he comes in third. He gets a space time punishment and thinks, well, I'm not going to win the veto. Let's cash this in. Let's make Amanda go through some horrific punishment, which, not really horrific, but maybe it is her. And in return, I'll get all Spencer's paid trip to a tropical paradise and walk out of this happy.
Oh, if I'm Spencer there and it's the Yankee swap competition, I'm just looking for a prize, baby. Let's do it. Like, I want the money. So let's go through the specifics here. Shock of all shocks, Gina Marie is the first one out, and she gets the standard sixth place prize, which is the veto. Probably not going to have a ton of success hanging on to it. Amanda goes out second, and she takes that veto from Gina Marie in exchange for the cone of shame, which is, again, I thought a very creative and hilarious punishment that I thought Gina Marie totally embraced and was hilarious in the entire week. I think before we get into even just more of the results here, at this point, Candace tells Judd, hey, they think you're the MVP and they don't trust you and whatever. And Amanda hears her whispering to Judd and starts really going off on Candace. And I know we heard before getting to see this episode air live, we knew that they were and had been yelling at each other throughout most of the veto competition. I was curious to see what they ended up showing on the actual episode itself. I was very happy to see that they showed plenty and certainly did not portray Amanda in the flattering light that I think they'd gone out of their way to portray her in previously.
Yeah, they're really starting to show like the full meat of Amanda's comments now, and I think certainly don't want to give too much credit to America, but you can certainly understand why they're coming to hate Amanda.
Right, and every single week we've come in here to talk about Big Brother, we've ended up talking about some kind of controversy on at least some level, and this really stuck out to me again. And it's amazing that this was not the most offensive thing. You know what I mean? Like, not even by a long shot. And not even the most offensive thing as it pertains to Candace herself. But when Amanda and Candace were getting in her fight, and Candace came back with some very admittedly hammed-up comeback, Amanda was spouted off with, oh, that's the Shaniqua coming out in you, which is, as mentioned, not the first time nor the last time that this, clearly derogatory turn of phrase would be used about Candace. And it really coupled with Amanda's entire supercut of ignorance that you referenced before, which people can find on YouTube, stood out to me. Yeah, bad times for Amanda.
Yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes, just reference. But, yeah, it's as if these people just lose sight of the fact that they're not in some high school playground anymore surrounded by people as equally hateful as them. They're on national television in front of cameras where they're going to be held accountable for their comments, if not by the other house guests in the moment, at least by, friends, family, potential employers after the fact. And now that, everyone has this social media presence on Facebook and Twitter, they're going to be held accountable by complete strangers who they've never met and yet who have an entirely justified, I think, sense of moral superiority over them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think my big question about this is, Amanda, say what we want and say what we will about her and the lack of thought that's going into a lot of what she's saying and the clearly derogatory implications. I think the bigger, not I shouldn't say the bigger issue, because it's certainly not the bigger issue, but something I've been curious about is, since like week two, I've been certain that if Amanda made it to jury, which she now has, she has been absolutely killing it in the diary room. She's been made into a big character that people, for the most part, seem to be liking for the vast majority of the early game. And I thought she was a lock returnee. Now, I'm curious what you think about all of these comments that she's made and kind of her public perception going down just so drastically. I don't even know if that's the case necessarily so much, even though I would still say she is the best person to bring back for a future season out of this cast. Do you see that all of this jeopardizing that?
I don't know. I think that she's right on the borderline at the moment. It's tough to say because we don't really have any good frame of reference. Like, the last full All-Star season we have is like 6 or 7 years ago now, and I can't remember anyone who was a lock for the cast but was so offensive that they got passed up for that from the first 6 seasons, unless you can...
Nothing
springs to mind for you.
Nothing. No.
Yeah, even if that happened, there's nothing remotely comparable to what we've seen this season, I don't think. I certainly don't think they're going to bring Aaron back no matter what happens going forward, just because they couldn't possibly justify the PR fallout from that. Amanda, though, maybe they could. Like, if she is identified as that mouthy bitch who was in a showmance with McCrae and kept yelling at people and got evicted in some dramatic fashion, rather than the people who brought the blight of racism upon Big Brother, then maybe. But I don't know how reliably they can predict that that's going to happen.
Right, they're never going to bring Aaron back, because in doing so, they're, in my mind, certainly just endorsing the fact that, hey, this bitch is going to say a lot of stupid shit, and we're okay with that, and we know it's going to happen, and we want it to happen. Like, that is the message that it would send in bringing Aaron back. I think GM, by extension, not that she would be a returning candidate regardless, nor would Jesse. I think it's going to come down to a lot of how Alyssa and Helen end up doing. I think they would much prefer bringing either of them back if they're in a position to do so. Otherwise, I still feel like we could see Amanda come back, even knowing what she said. And I guess it's coupled not only with how Helen and Alyssa do, but with how Amanda ends up handling the inevitable fallout from whenever she inevitably gets evicted here.
Yeah, I mean, going the other way then, do you think that, like, I imagine under normal circumstances, Howard wouldn't be an also candidate, but could he be in the discussion now, given that it seemed like the audience really tipped to him, and he is identified as the guy who is one of the main victims of all this, and, you know, if they're playing to demographics and they need a black guy for season 18 or whatever the next All-Stars is, he could be like the primary frontrunner for that.
I think if he had made jury, he would have been the frontrunner. At this point, I think it's got to be McRae and Andy to be the frontrunners to come back for guys.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that, actually.
Because they're going to do a 50-50 split, and that's why I think the female potential returnees are so much more interesting, because they need more, like, there is much more of a lack of captivating female returnees, and that's why I think they're going to do their best to push Helen and Alyssa as potential returnees and see what happens. And I think Amanda, while she had a great shot at one of those spots, I think that, honestly, that YouTube video that we will once again be linking to that's been circulating really could completely just wipe that off of the table if she's not openly and actively super apologetic at the end of at season's end as far as all of that's concerned. And if she, because I don't know if she would be doing all of these things if left to her own devices, but as far as I can tell, it's been McRae in her ear every single time saying, hey, you shouldn't be saying that. Like, that's racist. That's not okay. And she still goes ahead and does it. So I don't know if they can even count on her to not do it again if she were brought back.
Do McRae's chances get turned by this, do you think, then?
Not at all. I really don't.
Okay.
I think he's done a great job separating himself, at least in the eyes of public perception, and I think genuinely.
And in the game as well. Like, he doesn't... Whenever his name is brought up as a target, it's only in conjunction with Amanda being there. Like, we need to go after McRae and Amanda with the implicit assumption that we're going to be going after Amanda, and then once that's gone, like, we have no real reason to care about McRae.
Right, McRae is... It's phrased as we need to put up McRae and Amanda because McRae would be a vote to keep Amanda, much more so than McRae is a legitimate threat or someone that we don't like.
Yeah.
Granted, he is, I think, by far the biggest threat as far as winning the whole game is. Yeah. But then certainly Amanda is going to be, like, that's why I think he's the biggest threat to win the game, is because Amanda is putting up such a giant target in front of him when no one's going to. The only way McRae gets evicted anytime soon is if Amanda wins that round's veto, I think. I don't think there's any other chance. Yeah. Okay, so back to the Yankee swap. Candace goes out in fourth, and she picks up a Bahamas vacation, but trades it to Amanda for the veto. Spencer goes out in third and gets the spray tan punishment, which he trades to Amanda for the vacation. And Spencer, you know, mission established, get the prize, mission accomplished, right? We know it's going to be... something, and then a unitard in the top two spots, and one of them's going to take the veto. It comes down to Jesse and Judd, and I think this is an extremely interesting situation, much more so than just upon hearing the results thought it would be, because pretty much as far as I can tell, Judd's either going to veto Jesse or he's going to let Jesse veto herself. Whichever one of them wins, it doesn't matter. Jesse's going to come down. Jesse ends up missing the board entirely after going for the 50, and so she gets second, and Judd's going to get to act last once he sees all of the prizes and punishments and who has what that's going to be on the in play for his decision. Jesse gets $5,000 and trades it for the veto to Candace, and now Judd picks up the clownetard, so obviously he's going to trade it, and the decision comes down to what do you trade it for? Do you trade it for the veto or for a prize, Dom?
Yeah, and either way, he's going to be pissing people off it. Like, you've spoken incessantly about how Judd needs to be throwing competitions, and by the time he gets into the final round of this, he's basically won the competition, right? Either way, he is going to be deciding what happens with the veto this round, and people know that. Like, he can't get out of this, he can't come up with any excuses, and, you know, like, if he doesn't, if he takes it and doesn't use it on Jesse, then he pisses Jesse off. If he lets Jesse have it, or if he uses it on her, then everyone else is going to be pissed off at him. The far better thing for Judd to do, like, if he could see that this is going to happen, would just be to bow out of the competition as soon as possible.
Right.
But it doesn't turn out that way. He's in the final round, and he decides to let Jesse have the veto, which I have to imagine played some part in the decision to backdoor him during the double eviction, although we don't know exactly how much. But I would be very shocked if it wasn't at least raised in discussion.
I think this had a lot to do with the amount of pressure that Amanda had been putting on him before this veto competition began, where she went up and asked him, hey, if you win this veto, will you use it on me? And he, for whatever reason, said, yeah, I'll pretend to use it on Jesse and then I'll use it on you. So I really think just because of that, he really probably doesn't in the dark want the veto on his own hands. But nonetheless, when it gets down to he and Jesse, he's going to get the blame, like you said, no matter what the outcome is. And so at that point, I would probably be taking the veto myself and ensuring my own safety and Jesse's safety and just give Jesse the unitard in exchange for her week of safety just to ensure that I'm not a replacement nominee target. But I think, as you know, always be throwing, just like you said, just try to be getting out of this competition as quickly as possible so you're not put in that situation to begin with. Yeah. All right. So let's see. After this veto competition, there was, if we can get a little bit more into McCray and Amanda, I think here is an interesting part, because Amanda was obviously not thrilled with how everything went down, and McCray was not thrilled with Amanda's behavior during this competition. We talked about her fighting with Candace, and this really stood out to me. Again, if I could just heap some more praise onto McCray, he's, of course, number one in my must-win rankings at this point. I think he's playing a great game. And Amanda, not so much anymore, despite dictating so much of what's gone down within the house this entire game. She's really been getting into it with people where she has just no business, if she's thinking rationally, to be doing so. And while she may be pissed off at Candace and not thrilled with what Candace is saying about her, the thing that stood out to me is when justifying this whole fight to McCray, she said, she's just so stupid, she being Candace. And McCray's like, listen, you're so stupid for engaging in this. This is not on Candace. Candace is the one in jeopardy, and you're the idiot for trying to change anything about that situation.
Yeah, and there was this great line a few episodes later where McCray is trying to talk Amanda to not stupidly firing shots all over the place, and she said, stop being the dictator in this relationship. How breathlessly unaware do you have to be to come up with that?
Well, the thing that stood out to me, not only the absolute comedy of that line, but McCray's response to it, which was, oh yeah, okay, it's me, because it clearly, everything we've seen out of McCray this whole season, and this is one of my favorite things to see out of a player, and why I'm so high on McCray, is this guy is grounded in reality. He understands the actual terms of things that are going on within the house and within his own relationship and in general, and we see him, all of this is backed up by his diary room confessionals, where within the house, he's not giving any kind of hints to Amanda that, hey, maybe this isn't so much what I'm interested in, you and I being this big power couple and you running your mouth all over the place. But in the DR, you can see him saying, like, I really am not comfortable with how this is playing out, and I think that's absolutely the right impulse, and that's why I'm so high on McCray at this point.
Yeah, and he just seems very likable and very grounded. Like, he...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, I'm not watching The Feast very much, so maybe there's stuff that I'm not seeing or whatever, but at least just based on the editor shows, like, you can really root for the guy. Like, you actually feel like, obviously, he's the one who chose to get in the showmatch with Amanda, but at the same time, he's pretty much committed to that now. He's tied to it, and he can't really escape no matter how much she's going to drag herself and him down with her.
Now, we don't know who backed out at the last minute, but we can be quite certain that McCray was a very late addition to this cast. He didn't even get interviews with Matt Maynard during the preseason stuff. I can't even imagine what it would be like if the person who was originally slated, who CBS and Robin Cass and Grabner wanted on the show instead of McCray, like, who would there, I can't even think of who else I think would be, like, fun to just have a conversation with, and generally speaking, Andy seems fine, Helen seems fine, and so forth, but I can't imagine that whoever they had picked instead of McCray would have been anything close to as good as McCray has been for this season. He really is a huge percentage of why I'm still watching. Not to fanboy so hard about him, but I really feel like he's adding a very human element and much needed human element to this season. Because he does just seem like a totally normal guy. Yeah, and an easy enough guy to talk to, and just a guy who really just gets it. And that's a very refreshing thing, trust me, in modern Big Brother. And it is few and far between. All right. So, let's see. We now have Jessie's going to pull herself down off the block. And Alyssa is concocting this plan to boot Amanda. And this we saw this picking up a decent amount of traction with Alyssa and Helen.
Well, is Alyssa actually concocting this plan, or does this exist entirely in the minds of Amanda and maybe a few other people?
This was very real from what I could tell from the feed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That if they could have swung Judd or Andy, it was very, at least non-zero, that Amanda could have gone.
Because they showed Amanda mentioning it on the show, but they never showed anything to actually substantiate that. So as far as the audience were led to believe, this was just another one of Amanda's harebrained ideas.
Right. I wasn't on the feeds 24/7 all the time or whatever. But it was certainly being floated. I don't know how sincerely it was being floated, so maybe they didn't show it on the episode because in the diary room no one was backing it up because it was all bullshit in the first place. But as far as I could tell, just following the live feeds and what people were saying to each other, it was definitely non-zero that Amanda could have gone here.
Yeah, and by the way, looking forward to Judd's eviction. Like, Amanda thinks that there's no way America would put her up, so the MVP has to be inside the house. Alyssa has been MVP 3 times. She's had arguments with Alyssa before, and now she's thinking that Alyssa's going around trying to get votes to get her out, but apparently Judd's now the MVP who put her up in the first place? Like, what? How did she even get to this?
Paranoia is one hell of a drug, Dom.
It's just mind-blowing to me. I don't understand it. Like, I appreciate that it's very easy for us, sitting on our armchairs, not in this constant atmosphere of paranoia, to judge people for how they're thinking, but, like, I don't see how Amanda just comes up with these thoughts. I just don't get it.
I honestly feel like the root of Amanda's entire personality at this point is the paranoia that goes along with being the person who, at least in her own mind, and honestly in practice, is really the one controlling everything that happens. She's got a lot to be thinking about, and I think kind of like what we saw with Andrea on Karamoan, where anytime she feels like any angle may be uncovered, as confident as she feels in all other aspects of the game, she's going to freak out and perhaps overcorrect on that.
I think that's a pretty good comparison, even though obviously in all other regards their personality seems to be pretty much completely different. But
yeah, okay. All right, so Jessie, as mentioned, ends up vetoing herself, and if those ideas of Alyssa spreading rumors about one or trying to lobby people to boot Amanda are in fact legit, and if they got back to Gina Marie, which I'm not sure they did, and I'm not, again, just not even sure if they were legit when they were getting floated, this wouldn't even be a consideration, and I would be putting Alyssa up to make sure that my vocal target, Candace, goes home. As it ends up happening, Spencer goes up, just as kind of off in no man's land, not going to go anywhere, not going to be influencing anything, and honestly, if I'm Spencer here, I'm not even concerned. I'm happy to be on the block, honestly. But I'm a sicko, so who knows. So, okay, let's get into, I think, the main event for this episode, and that is the first live double eviction of the season. This is always exciting stuff, despite the first 45 minutes of this double eviction. We know from just following along with the live feeds that Candace is the lock boot, in all practical terms, entering this double eviction. Do you feel like, I know we talked about whether or not people were or were not targeting Amanda. Do you think there was merit for people to be targeting Amanda instead?
Well, which people?
Up to you, whoever. For anyone okay, to be targeting Amanda.
I can understand why any of the people that she's randomly got into fights with over the past few weeks would want to go after her, and I think that would be entirely sensible from a strategic standpoint. But I think the real interesting thing here is, do Helen and Andy want to take a shot at her? And if so, do they want to do it now? Because they've been talking on the feeds over the past few days about how eventually meaning probably next week if it's within their power, they're going to need to try and break the two of them up. And similarly, Amanda seems to be floating the idea of going after Helen, and that seems to be exclusive to Helen. Like, I haven't heard Andy's name floated or Liz's name floated, but certainly at some point these two factions are going to split and go after each other, and so it's going to come down to a game of, reverse chicken, if you like, of who's going to strike first. And, they could have struck first this week, and they did. Whether or not that's going to turn out to be correct, maybe that's going to be the thing which, with hindsight, ends up looking like the thing which ruined their game, but who knows? I mean, I can see why Helen wouldn't want to pull the trigger this week, and I can get behind that.
Right, exactly. I feel like when Howard is already gone, if I'm one of the other people who, if Amanda and McCrae get broken up, would become one of the big targets, and I think those people are specifically Helen, Andy, and Alyssa, would then become the big, most public faction that people would have the most reason to be concerned about. I would definitely not want to be booting Amanda. However, I feel like if they had kept Howard, as they probably, in my estimation, probably should have, when Howard ended up getting the boot, then Amanda would be a very justifiable boot here. But, of course, that wasn't the case. And so I definitely can understand why Andy would not be willing to go along with that plan to boot out Amanda, to keep that buffer in, because I think she is the biggest buffer in the house at this point, basically.
Yeah, and you can really see how decisions made a few weeks ago had, a ripple effect for future weeks, where, let's say where let's say they keep Caitlin instead of Erin, and last week they keep Howard, suddenly everything looks completely different. And maybe, you know, if the same thing happens this week, they do decide to go after Amanda now and see what happens next week.
Yeah, I mean, we're already down, you know, after, I guess by the end of this double eviction, we're down to 9 people. At this point, we're down to 10, where if Caitlin's still in the house, and if Howard's still in the house, and if Erin and whoever, Candace are gone, or whoever, the board looks entirely different, and you can really start taking shots at some of these big players while keeping other buffers in. And that's why I was an advocate for keeping Caitlin in and an advocate for keeping Howard in.
Yeah, I guess the big question comes down to which side the floaters fall on. Like, Erin, it seems, is in, like, she was offered this deal a few weeks ago by Helen, but she seems to have got closer to McCrae and Amanda, and I guess kind of to Andy, but not really, than she has to Helen by this point. And similarly, you know, Judd, after they decide to boot him out, Jesse presumably isn't going to be happy about this, but she's probably not going to go over to Amanda and Jean Marie, given that they've been blasting her whenever they get the opportunity. So maybe she falls on Helen's side. You know, so given that eventually people are going to have to pick sides, it's going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out.
Right, yeah, and if you're making a choice boot for your own game at the risk of pissing one specific person off, I'm happy for that one person to be Jesse, quite honestly. Like, what's she really going to do about it? Yeah, so we know Candace is going to be the one getting the boot here, and for whatever reason, they still do that stupid thing where moments prior to the live eviction, they let each of the nominees give their little speech, knowing that no vote. I'd be shocked if any vote in the history of Big Brother has ever been changed by one of those speeches. But nonetheless, it's part of the formula, so we're gonna do it. And Candace is the first one up, and Gina Marie has some comments for Candace since she's giving her speech.
Okay, listen, the Union Pacific Railroad needs to get their due thanks for letting Spencer come on the show. It's been a great opportunity for him, and you know he needs to repay them for all the kindness they've shown him.
Oh, yes. All the kindness that they've shown him over this past week. We'll be getting there shortly. But I thought it was very interesting on the level of, like, when Dan and Ian were giving their final speeches last year, and Ian would just keep talking over Dan, and it was, like, of course frowned upon, but there's not really much you can do on live TV. Candace and Gina Marie took this to a whole different level, where Candace basically knew she was going and used her speech to just defame Gina Marie, and Gina Marie wasn't having any of that. They started yapping back and forth.
You say the fame, but she's just telling it like it is.
I don't even, terrible word choice, I guess, on my part. But, yeah, very entertaining stuff nonetheless, because it's incredibly rare that we see anything like this. And I'm sure this is forbidden in the rules when someone's talking that you've got to give them their chance to talk.
Yeah, and as much as we might try and pretend to be high-minded or whatever, there's nothing we like more than an unpredicted catfight live on national television.
Oh, yeah, I was live tweeting up a storm during all of this. However, it got taken to, I know this got taken way too far as Candace was on her way out the door and she and GM were still going back and forth and she was saying, oh, you know, you're 32, 33, whatever, you still live at home with your mother, and GM comes back with, at least my mother still loves me, unlike yours.
Yeah, so when Candace said that, I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe not the best place to be saying this, but it's a fair point. And then Jean Marie just escalates it pretty far just in the space of about 5 seconds. And goes into territory which really she shouldn't ever be going into.
This is, I mean, even, not to say that the racism hasn't been plenty for me, but this might be the most uncomfortable moment of the season for me, because that is so far out of bounds as far as I'm concerned. You know, Candace has had, she didn't find out she was adopted until she was, I think, 26 or so, 25, 26.
Yeah, and as you said before, we're still not quite sure how she didn't find that out, because apparently she has a white family. But
right, but nonetheless, she talks a lot about her relationship with both the mother who raised her as well as her biological mother, and it clearly is, like, probably the most significant thing that's ever happened to her in her life, and something that I'm sure she's had a lot of different takes on herself as far as dealing with it. And for Gina Marie to cross that line is really brutal, especially I shouldn't even say especially on live TV at any point. That is just one of the most, if not the most, distasteful things I've heard all season, and we've heard a lot of retarded shit this season.
Yeah, I think neither of us are Candace fans, and in a normal season we certainly wouldn't be rooting for Candace, but she's had to endure a lot of unnecessary shit this season, and I think,
unprecedented, completely.
Yeah, and if anything, I'm not sure how happy she's going to be about having to go to the jury now, because, like, I imagine once she has left that pressure cooker, basically, the one thing she might want to do is just go back home and just repair her life and get back to normal. Now, she has to go to sequester for another month and a half, and she's going to have to be seeing all these people again as they get evicted and come through the door. So, you know, it's not going to be pleasant for her, but hopefully she comes out of it and it isn't too stressful in the long term.
Right, like, if we see a situation where it's, you know, Candace and Judd are off at the jury house, and then maybe Gina Marie comes in this next week, it's not going to be like in PB7 where it's, oh, Marcellus and Howie are stuck together in the jury. Isn't that hilarious? It's like, Gina Marie and Candace are stuck together in the jury. I feel fucking horrible for Candace in this situation.
And also for Judd, because no one wants to be living through that.
Right, he's going to be the James Ryan to the Howie and Marcellus fight, basically.
But by which you mean he's going to be banging all of them after they get evicted?
Probably. I mean, Judd, the bear shirt, the limitations of the power of the bear shirt knows no ends. Yeah. All right. I mean, truly just despicable stuff. Not that Gina Marie, my opinion or esteem on Gina Marie could have gone down much further. It's certainly from time to time, like, comical, just generally speaking, how dumb she is. But it really transcends all of that at this point into just how inconsiderate and naive, and again, just how fucking stupid she is, and how the lack of thought or class that goes into any kind of these comments, because it's completely repulsive to me, and nothing short of that.
Yeah. And it still might not be the worst thing said this week, because that's just how these people do.
Yeah, two controversies down, one to go. We'll get there. Okay. So we get yet another. It's time for the live HOH, and the winner of the live HOH is once again Erin. Erin banging off these HOH competitions, and I thought it was interesting. She, upon winning, was clearly trying to throw it. She was not happy whatsoever about winning this competition. Did you like that impulse on her part, or do you feel like she dropped the ball in not throwing it harder?
Well, I guess so, and as I said earlier, it's a sign of just how far she's come in this game that she gets to feel upset about winning a competition now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you could see, like, I don't think, my memory isn't complete on this, but I don't think it's ever happened before that everyone except one of us gets taken out on a question that early with so many people left in the competition, right? Like, you often see it where it's like two or three people get it right and everyone else gets it wrong and suddenly the field's now down a bit. But it's rather the competition's won, like, on a question, like, two or three rounds in.
I want to say it's happened once before, but it's I can't cite the example of when it was, but it's certainly been, which is thrilling commentary, I'm sure. But, yeah, I mean, I know there have been times where it would come down to, like, Kacer and Nokomis or something, and seven people would go out on the same, but it's extremely rare that just someone, there are that many people left, and someone, just one person gets it right.
Yeah, but in the same moment, you could see the look of upset on Erin's face and the audible gasp from the audience that was not pleased about this, to put it mildly.
Right, and as our buddy Koss put it, I would be paying way more for live feeds of Alison Grodner as Erin's winning these HOHs than live feeds of actually inside the house. Yeah, because I feel like she's probably not thrilled, at least if we can extrapolate, I think, reasonably about how long the MVP twist stayed intact and how, you know, America being the one voting for it. Nonetheless, so actually speaking
although at this point, now that there's no chance of the controversy escalating, because Erin, like, Candace is gone now, and, okay, I'll put it this way. Most of the minorities are gone now, and Erin no longer has anyone to target, and so I can't imagine this is going to escalate any further than it has already, and in any case, Erin seems to be calming down a little bit, and I think, although given that she said these things in the first place, she's obviously not self-aware, I think she realizes that the way to be ingratiating herself with the majority is to not be saying this kind of stuff, and so I think a lot of that's in the past now, although that doesn't make it any better, obviously. And so, at this point, I think production doesn't really care where Erin goes, because they know she's not going to win the game, and they're going to see to it that she doesn't if she makes it that far. And so, she's going to go sometime, like, early or mid-jury, and, you know, that's going to be the end of it, pretty much.
Right. Oh, I would be very concerned if I were production about the idea that in an untouched game, Erin could quite easily go on to win this game. But as you said, I would not be concerned if I was production, because I know I'm not going to let that happen if I'm playing Alison Grodner for a moment and assuming all of her motivations and faculties. I know it's never going to happen. There's no chance. All right, so actually, let's get into this MVP twist a little bit, because, of course, it's the live double eviction. We don't have time for anyone to make an MVP nomination, and the MVP twist gets dissolved.
Yeah, obviously, I'm pleased that it's gone, although I'm not pleased that it didn't happen sooner, and quite frankly, I'm upset that we have to be having this conversation at all, because I'd much rather this was just never concerned from the beginning, or at least, if it were, it was in a cast that could do full justice to the twist.
Right, yeah, I like you said, I wish it had been gone sooner. It was very unceremoniously wiped off the table, where it was just a 10-second announcement, and then 3 seconds of applause, and then no one else really cared about it from that point on, but like you said, very glad to see it gone, happy to be entering the comparatively interesting part of the game, because MVP just ruined it.
Yeah, and hopefully we're going to get something resembling a normal game of Big Brother now, even though it's been pared down and all the interesting people pretty much are gone. And they're gone mostly as a direct result of the MVP twist, so...
Right, yeah. We should be clear. It's the end of the MVP twist until Alyssa needs a bailout, and the MVP is going to happen via some kind of Pandora's box. Don't even question that.
I like the phrasing that they used, where just because you're out of the game doesn't mean, or something to that effect, where it's like, it doesn't mean anything unless Alyssa gets evicted, in which case it might mean something.
Right. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. We both watch Big Brother Canada. Maybe someday we'll podcast about Big Brother Canada, but in Big Brother Canada...
Don't get hasty there.
Yeah, we got to give it time to settle, definitely. But in Big Brother Canada, a juror was evicted and then got to come back into the game very late into the game. And I think even if Alyssa is never evicted, I think we will see a juror come in either way. And I think if Alyssa is evicted, it will always be Alyssa.
Yeah, is there going to be time for that, even if they do want to do it? Because obviously they've lengthened the season by about 2 weeks to make up for extending the cast by 2 people. But is that going to be enough? Because we've already had one double eviction. I'm pretty sure we're going to have another to make the schedule work. So if they do bring someone back and we're going to have a third, I mean, how's it going to work?
They're going to make it enough. Whatever they want to happen, they're going to do it. If they feel like if Alyssa gets evicted in the next week or two, she will come back and they'll put in a third double eviction. Book it. Yeah, all right. So moving ahead, we see Jesse and Spencer go up as Aaron's nominations. Very standard. It's looking like this is going to be a very boring live show. And then Aaron wins the power of veto herself, and Jesse starts hugging goodbye to everyone. And I'm like, oh, great. You know, here we go. This is just basically a waste of my hour. What else is new watching Big Brother 15? Twist. Aaron pulls Jesse down and puts up Judd, which we've been hearing about on the live feeds. I did not think this was going to come in, and I thought, despite loving Judd and, of course, loving the bear shirt, I thought this was fantastic TV for maybe the first time all season.
Yeah, I mean, I slept through the episode, so I wasn't able to watch it down, sponsored by the good people involved in communications. But there was a GIF I found on Reddit of the watch with Dan, like, live reaction, where it's like, he's kind of sitting back, and then Aaron announces she's using the veto, and he looks all happy, and then he says she's nominating Judd, and he just looks completely crestfallen. And I think it's not because he just loves Judd or anything, but it's like, this is the one chance, maybe all season, we've had for someone to at least take a shot at the majority, and maybe go after Amanda, maybe go after somebody else, and yet she just played it safe and went after Judd, which, it seems dramatic in the moment, because, it's a live eviction, and this is all happening very suddenly, but, the house wanted Judd gone. If this had been a standard week, this probably would have happened with the same outcome, like, only stretched over the course of 3 or 4 days. So it wasn't maybe as big as it seemed. It was just, since it was compressed into a short time frame, it seemed much more compelling.
Well, I was watching with Dan as it was airing live, brought to you by our good friends at Robson Communications, and he, during the first vote, everyone knew Candace was going to be gone, but Amanda was at least up on the block, and he was rooting very hard for Amanda to be the one to go, for someone to just put on the latex gloves and get some blood on their hands. And so I'm sure when Aaron announced that she was going to use her veto during the live show, I'm pretty sure his impulse was just, do it! Let's see Amanda go up here, and then we'll vote her out. But instead it was Judd. So let's talk, actually, I think, about the ideas of voting out Judd. He goes out by a unanimous vote. That's no surprise once he's on the block. But did you like this, just generally speaking, as far as backdooring him here?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, if this makes sense, it almost becomes correct because people want it to be correct, where, given that everyone's on board with it, deviating from that puts a target on you, and therefore it's just the wrong play, given that you have no personal investment in keeping Judd there. But I'm just mystified as to how this actually happened at all, because I think Amanda somehow became convinced that Judd was the MVP, despite that not really making any sense whatsoever. And this is another example of how the MVP twist, directly or indirectly, ended up influencing another eviction. And I don't think, you know, maybe Judd would have been evicted in some other fashion later or at another time, but I don't think this would have happened to him this early or in this way had the MVP twist not been there.
Right. I think it began a couple of weeks ago when Amanda found out that Judd had withheld some just completely irrelevant information from her, and she was then starting on the Judd paranoia, that kind of overcompensation for, oh, if this guy's not being fully honest with me and if I can't manipulate him, then he's untrustworthy and he needs to go. And honestly, I don't hate the idea, as much as I like Judd, I don't hate the idea at all of backdooring Judd here if you're Amanda or Helen, honestly, where despite their tactics probably not, they should not be working, but they clearly are and have been and have no signs of slowing down anytime soon, and Judd is someone who could probably be the biggest contender to throw a wrench into that at some point. So I certainly don't hate this idea.
Yeah, so you might not hate this idea, but apparently the house gets to on some level, because we see what's become a really frustrating trend this season, where every time they evict pretty much anybody, it's like, I sadly vote to evict X, or I sadly vote to evict Y. Like, firstly, it just comes across as blatantly insincere. Like, you're evicting them, your chances in this game just improve significantly because they're gone. So don't try and tell me that you're unhappy that they're leaving. But secondly, like, why do you think they feel the need to do this? Like, it hasn't something which they just do, like, on principle or because everyone does it. It seems to have become a thing this season.
I think they genuinely, on a certain level, don't always feel great about whoever they're evicting, but they're still going to go ahead and do it because they're going to do what Amanda and Helen really have beaten into their heads is the right thing to do. And maybe it's a sign of, you know, to me it signals just not a very strong field of players who are so willing to go along with all these evictions that they, quote, don't want to necessarily be doing, or that they're sadly voting to evict whomever. But at the same time, I feel like they genuinely aren't feeling great about it, and they're not just being entirely facetious, but you're right, it's definitely annoying, to say the least, as far as take some ownership, take some responsibility about what you're doing, and appreciate why you're doing it, at least for me, in a perfect world. Yeah, alright, so let's see, we end up, Judd ends up going out, he at least gets to be wearing the bear shirt on his way out the door. It would have been criminal for him to leave and then everyone else to get to enjoy that all summer. Yeah, so end of Judd's game, at least for now. Maybe we'll see him back again later. More on that very quickly. But before we get into looking ahead, and we'll be issuing our standard spoiler alert as far as live feed stuff is concerned very quickly. However, I definitely want to talk about the third controversy this week, which is the comments that Spencer's made, about, you know, child pornography and so forth. That as far as I can tell, I may have a very unpopular opinion about this, but I feel like what happened has been deliberately presented completely out of context, and I think the context is the entire basis for how we should be judging this. So, Dom, I don't know if you have anything to add before we just kind of get into what happened. But what happened was McCray was in the shower. This is the context. This is what people are not being told. McCray was in the shower, and Spencer thought it would be funny to go pick up McCray's microphone and say some things into it, knowing how taboo and how out of and how unsavory and so forth what he would be saying was, under the premise of the joke being that it was McCray. It was being said into McCray's microphone, and thus people would obviously understand it was Spencer saying it, but clearly also understand that he was pretending to be McCray. Like, the joke is, hey, McCray would say these things into this microphone anyway, when obviously he would not. And, of course, in doing this, he was talking about how much he, Spencer, acting as McCray, loves child porn and just jokingly trying to get McCray in trouble, basically. But everyone, you know, the producers understood as it was happening that it was a joke and so forth. However, the reports of this controversy, as mentioned, have, I feel, very deliberately left this context out. And as I said once again, I feel like that is all you really need to know about the situation. So, Dom, what were your thoughts about this when you first heard about it?
Okay. I agree with you, however, I think we both agree that this was, whether or not it was a joke, and I think it's clear that it was, this is a monumentally stupid thing to say.
No,
aside from the fact, I mean, aside from the fact that it really isn't a very funny joke at all, just don't joke about these things. I mean, not, and I'm not saying that because I think this is like a taboo subject which shouldn't be, which isn't a valid topic for humor or anything. But it's like, you are in a forum where what you say can and will be twisted and used out of context, and you don't have the ability to answer those criticisms from where you are in the house, at least not for another month and a half. So you know that by the time you say this, if what you say gets taken out of context and takes on a life of its own, you won't be able to contain that before it's spread like wildfire. So just, you know, as much as I feel it's irresponsible to read into Spencer's comments something which isn't there, at the same time, it was incredibly stupid to make them in the first place, and he can't be surprised or be upset that this is what's happening.
No, I agree totally. It was, I do not mean at all to imply that I am endorsing this joke or those comments in general. It was absolutely a monumentally stupid thing to be saying, especially, like you said, when he just, those are going to get blown out of proportion, and he's not going to be able to do anything to defend himself for the long time, for as long as he's in the house. And certainly he's had several ramifications from this, like his employers at whatever, you know, train station he's working at, have, like, contacted their local authorities and identified him as a potential predator against children, which, as far as I, like, it's not as far as I can tell. It's clear that is not the case. He would never make anything close to this kind of joke if he actually had anything to be self-conscious about, first of all. And second of all, again, it was really stupid stuff. And unlike a lot of what he said in the house, like, he certainly said other things about, you know, we saw him say stuff about Hitler, about race, calling, you know, some creative nicknames for Andy and so forth. But this, to me, this is not even close to on the level of some of the other things he said. And while I don't totally endorse certainly much of what several things that Spencer said inside the house, this is something I honestly, given the context, have pretty much no problem with this, apart from he should be aware that this is how it's going to be responded to.
Yeah, but at some point, when you start saying this is a lot worse than a lot of the other stupid shit that he said, the stupid shit being X, Y, and Z, when that list gets so long, eventually you have to start wondering, like, how much of this is actually sincere? Like, and I don't mean how much of this he's joking about, but, like, surely you don't do this stuff so consistently unless there's some kind of, like, basis to it that reflects how you actually think.
Okay, well, I don't know, maybe I misheard you, maybe I misspoke the first time. I think this is far less significant than a lot of the other stuff that he said. It certainly doesn't offend me on some of the levels that he said. His comments about Hitler specifically, because that was him speaking as himself, whereas for me, again, context is the ultimate arbiter of what? Oh, it's hilarious.
No, I agree. He said that stuff about Hitler, but maybe he was just joking. Like,
no, but I think that's the point. Is in that context, it was pretty clear, I thought, that he was genuinely, at least on a certain level, kind of offering up some praise for Hitler, whereas in this context, anyone with two fucking brain cells rubbed together can tell he was clearly making a joke. And there's no, I don't understand, unless you are attempting to deliberately mislead people about the comments, how you could possibly interpret that any differently.
I agree, but I think if you look at some stuff which is most questionable, some of the stuff he said about Jesse, for instance, and some of the other women in the house, stuff which, by itself, if you take everything that he said literally, is far down on the list of offensive and stupid things that he said, it's clear that that stuff is the most egregious, precisely because it's easiest to look at it as if he's actually being sincere, which I think he is in that stuff. Whereas I agree with you, the stuff about child porn or whatever and Hitler's clearly a joke. However, like, eventually, when you're making all these jokes, the fact that you're willing to make them in the first place is itself a bad thing that needs to be listed amongst all of this other stuff.
I feel like if everybody's favorite Louis C.K. did, like, this kind of stuff, granted it's an entirely different setting, but that's the point. It's context. I feel like everyone would think this was hilarious and the funniest thing that's ever happened in the Big Brother house, when it's clear that's the circumstance.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff that professional comedians say that you and they would not say out of their professional setting. Like, And it's clear that it's okay to say that stuff precisely because it's in that context, because it's a joke. Here, I agree that most of what Spencer says is him attempting to be funny, but I don't think you can blame other people for not interpreting that in the way that it's intended. I will say though that when it's stuff with subject matter that's disconcerting, I think if you're going to make those kind of accusations about Spencer, you have an obligation to make sure that they're fully informed, that you do your research first, because you saying that Spencer is a dick for saying whatever is, it's not even on the same level as you, and I'm using you in the general sense here, as you saying that Spencer's like a potential paedophile because he makes jokes about childborn. Like, you need to back that up before you're willing to say it. But like, Spencer is entirely not blameless here. Like, this is a situation created because Spencer said this stuff in the first place. This wouldn't even be a discussion if Spencer weren't so, at least to some level, fucked up in the head.
Okay, I understand that. Yes, to a certain degree, Spencer brought this on himself. I want to point out, and we'll post a link to this as well, because I think Ian absolutely nailed the correct response to the situation, and I feel like not only praise for that, but praise for Andy Dennert for, when reporting about this situation, actually including the context of this, because I feel like, yes, Spencer said some dumb stuff. I feel like the far more irresponsible thing to do is the number of times that I've seen these comments and this story reported with deliberately leaving out the context. Because when I first heard about it, I was completely unaware of the context, and I thought it was absolutely horrible stuff that Spencer was just saying, trying to be funny, but just like, you know, hanging out on the couch, smoking a cigarette, and just like jokingly saying that onto his own microphone. When I found out the context, it completely changed everything for me, and that's what I feel like. I have a far bigger issue with the people trying to make this into a giant story and, oh, Spencer is a predator. And yes, he brought this on himself by saying these things in the first place, but I feel like the far bigger error is being made by those who are going so far out of their way to mislead and vilify Spencer because of this, when clearly the informed people who are aware of the context understand that it was not meant it remotely in the way that most people are jumping to try to assign his motivation to be.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I think you can leave it there.
Okay, sure. So I think now would be the time that we would be issuing our regular spoiler alert. As we know, after the double eviction, a new head of household has been crowned. We're going to be getting into all of that and also looking ahead at who we're liking going forward, who we're not liking so much. For those of you who only watch on the TV show, we thank you very much for tuning in. Definitely don't continue listening beyond this point, because we're going to spoil the hell out of it. So, Dom, let's get into this, because our new HOH is Andy. First thoughts about that?
Okay, well, my first reaction was what I imagine yours was when Judd won his first HOH all those weeks ago now. And it was like, why would he possibly want to win this? And then so I thought, well, let's at least be charitable to Andy. Like, he's had days and days of downtime in this house to think about like all whether he should be winning competitions and think through all the possible scenarios. So I imagine that he has some reason to want to win this, and given that I think he's shown himself to be a pretty smart guy over the past few weeks, he's definitely, I think, playing the best game in the house, with the possible exception of McRae. I want to at least try and like get into his head to figure out why he might want to win this, because I agree with what I imagine your reaction is. It just seems baffling to me that he'd want to potentially throw all that away by winning this. I think, though, that if he's going to do what the house agrees they want to do, which I guess we can get into his nominations now, which is nominate Jesse and Spencer, with the idea of getting presumably Jesse out, and if not, then Spencer can leave and it'll be fine. Like, given that no one in the house will take any issue with that whatsoever, I don't see any downside really to winning HOH, because I think one of the risks for Andy going forward is that people will catch on to the fact that he doesn't want to win and use that as a reason to maybe want to value him less as an ally, and him doing this now at least gives the impression that he does sincerely want to win competitions, and that he can do so. And so if he manages to get that benefit without getting any blood in his hands, then I think it's fine.
Yeah, those are definitely both fair points and counterpoints to the merits of Andy winning this. And like you, I was initially like, well, what the hell are you doing here, man? But at the same time, I do want to extend to him the benefit of the doubt. And I know that at least last year, the post-double eviction HOH was a tournament-style challenge. And so for me to really want for me to be comfortable passing full judgment on this, I'm going to need to see who, like, if that was the case, who his opponents were, or who he won the HOH to prevent, like, if he won it to prevent Jesse or Spencer, I think specifically, from winning, then I'm going to be a lot more comfortable with it. But if it came down to, like, he and Alyssa, and he went out of his, or he and anyone, honestly, other than, like, Jesse or Spencer, and he went out of his way to win it, and the reason I'm thinking that might be likely is I remember vividly watching his interview preseason with Matt Maynard and the standard first HOH, win it or throw it. And he was like, win it, obviously, right? And I feel like we've seen enough out of him talking about wanting to win these competitions and just being unable to do so that I do at least have some reservations about giving him that much benefit of the doubt when it comes to knowing to be throwing. But at the same time, I certainly think Andy knows to a much greater degree than probably anyone but McRae what he's doing inside that house. And I certainly agree that I think it's going to be hard for this to immediately come back and bite him.
Yeah, the issue as well is that, let's say, Haddon wins HOH or McRae wins HOH, there's going to be the risk of the two sides that he's currently sitting on the fence between, like McRae and Amanda and Haddon, Alyssa and himself, might try and turn on each other. And given that he seems to not want that to happen yet, like in his conversations with Haddon, he has been talking her down from the ledge, just trying to get Amanda up. He gets a chance to take that into his own hands and ensure that that doesn't happen this week.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, certainly there is upside in the immediate sense in winning an HOH if you're Andy, and especially when you know that most people on both sides of the fence that you're kind of straddling probably have the same nominations in mind. You can really sell it by putting up Jesse and Spencer as I'm doing what's in your best interest group one and your best interest group two individually.
Yeah, and it's not as if by winning it now he leaves himself vulnerable for next week, because nobody's going to put him up. And that speaks to just how good a game that he's playing at the moment. And that's not just because he's so worthless that nobody sees any value in putting him up, because firstly, that's not true. And secondly, there are people this season that is true of, namely Jesse and Gina Marie, who have managed to alienate people to such a degree that they've put targets on themselves anyway. Because the fact that Andy is not on anyone's radar at the moment is a fantastic sign for him. And so, like, it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? Because obviously he is in a great spot at the moment, but at some point, when these two factions go after each other, he is going to have to be seen to pick a side. Now, if he can stay in the middle, convincing each side that he's with them just as they're going after each other, then his game rises to a whole other level. But, you know, that's going to be a very difficult juggling act for him to pull off, and I'm not quite sure how he's going to do it.
Right, and I think Andy is one of the people who would have been better served leaving in the Caitlins and leaving in the Howards, and getting these kind of sides going after each other, where whoever's the HOH for the week, they're going to put up two people from different sides. You're not going to get floaters like Aaron or like Candace, potentially, if she had been left in, putting up people from different factions, because that's really all you have to be worried about in Andy's position is when one side is on the block versus another side, compared to when one side is putting two people from the opposing alliance on the block. You can really kind of just go with the flow there you'll not be a nominee and you'll get to be voting and get to be hearing out everyone's reasonings for who they want gone and adjusting from there. And I think that really is, like you were saying, it speaks to the great game that Andy's been playing so far, because he is staying off the block, but not in that worthless sense, like you said, where it's people are keeping Andy off the block because they're like, why would I want Andy on the block? He's working with me, we have a good relationship going, I definitely want him to be one of the people voting, and I don't want him being at risk.
Yeah, like, we make fun of him constantly for being in every single conversation, but apparently that's working out for him. Like, he's managed to not do it in such a way that it becomes anything more than just a standard joke. Oh, look, Andy's over there again, right? No one seems to assign any significance to that, which they really should be doing at this point, I think.
Right, and I've been thinking, for a little while about, you know, we can say, oh, Amanda being a dictator and trying to tell everyone in the house what to do week after week after week is terrible gameplay, or at least not great or optimal gameplay. But when it keeps working week after week after week, at what point do we have to start assigning credit to that? And I think it's the same school of thought for Andy, where it's like, yeah, he's in every single strategy conversation, which, generally speaking, one would not be best served to be doing. But it keeps working for him, so why? And it's working very, very well. Not only working, but working very well for him. So at what point do we have to start assigning credit? And I think right around now is about that point for Andy.
Right. Going back to what we said just now, I think the fact that he's in this position is a good reason for him to be winning HOH, because when that House of Cards inevitably does collapse and he can't maintain this big supermajority anymore, he needs to know how all the floaters and all the swing votes might shake out during that, and being HOH is a great time to be able to judge that, because people are going to be coming to him, pleading their cases, asking for him to put certain people up, and he gets to gather all that information and get a good picture of what's really going on.
Right. I think if there were not two clear consensus targets in Jesse and Spencer, like if this were a week down the line and there was only one of those clear targets, this would be a terrible time for Andy to win HOH. And I think, like, if he has to make a replacement nominee, we don't know how the veto is going to shake out yet. If he does have to make a replacement nominee, that could be tough if he goes with anyone other than probably, like, Gina Marie. But at the same time, like, if that were the case, that would be a terrible time for him, because he would have to pick a side. But it's not the case, and now he gets everyone coming to him, and he can probably be making some deals that people are going to be very happy to uphold their end of next week. Mm-hmm. So very excited to see how Andy's week as HOH plays out. It could get very interesting if the veto ends up getting used. Dom, anything else to add before we get into looking ahead at who we're liking as potential winner candidates?
I guess final thoughts on the MVP twist then, given that it's been retired this week. We went into a lot of it already, but I guess if you had to summarize your thoughts on the twist in general, how it's been implemented this season, and what we think is going to happen now that it's gone. I mean, you can take that now if you want.
Sure. I feel like it was deliberately implemented extraordinarily, maliciously is probably the wrong word, but with clear intent to dictate far too much of the scope of the game. Alyssa was put in there to get it every week. I think it was done extraordinarily unethically. Glad to see it go. Wish it had gone sooner, and I'm very optimistic about the idea of actually getting something close to a real game now.
Yeah, I can echo a lot of those sentiments. I think it's something which had some kind of abstract potential, maybe, but certainly not. It was something that didn't have any realistic prospect of being fulfilled with this cast, and given how the show is produced and formatted at the moment. I think, like, if you look at it, we had it just being gifted to Alyssa for the first 3 weeks. There was never any sign that she was going to do anything remotely interesting with it, other than screw over some of the more fun and likable players. And, you know, if you look at how it played out, when Alyssa didn't get it anymore and Julie said that America was going to essentially be MVP, my first thought was, well, it's great, Alyssa's not going to get it anymore. But then I realized that was just being turned over to the type of people who were voting for Alyssa to be MVP in the first place. So it's like, so what am I supposed to hope? Like, if the vote for that is fair, then America gets a vote. And if it's not fair, then Gronna gets to be MVP, and that's even worse. So it's like, there's essentially no good outcome for it, which is why I think my initial hope that it was going to turn out well was probably misplaced.
Right. I think our preseason hopes that it could turn out well were, in retrospect, extraordinarily naive on our parts, just knowing what we know. I couldn't believe that I was more disappointed than I thought I could be by it, but I absolutely was. I thought it was terribly done.
I think a lot of what we said about its potential as an element of a game stands up to scrutiny, but that's just not the same game that we're currently watching at the moment.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like what I said earlier in the show when talking about MVP, which is a game of Big Brother where this MVP twist is in place with this cast, this production crew, and this set of viewers, is not real Big Brother to me. And I just am so excited that it's no longer a part of the game. Like, we actually get a game now.
Yeah, it feels so weird that stage of the game is starting with 9 people now.
It's wild. I mean, if Aaron had not, I feel like it was deliberately dragged on for as long as they possibly could before getting to a double eviction, because they were so dead set on trying to get Aaron up, like, give America a chance to get some revenge on Aaron for some of the stuff she was saying. And then it became clear that was not going to happen, and they finally had to say, fuck it.
Yeah, although part of me wonders, if they just want to wipe their hands clean of Aaron, would they really have changed the jury setup for specifically this season so that it was guaranteed that she would be on the jury? Like, that doesn't seem like a good way to make all this controversy die down.
Because
at least if you just let Erin into the outside world, if she gets evicted soon, which admittedly isn't very likely given the current dynamics in the house, then obviously she has to handle the brunt of that, but at least you as a production company can kind of leave that to Erin and her PR crew and just move on with it. Whereas this way, you ensure that she's going to be there at least through the finale and continue being relevant and being part of the show.
I think there was perhaps the extending the jury to 9 people, I'm sure they knew, of course, that Candace was going to be in the booth that night. So when you put Candace, you lock her in a jury spot, it's going to make it more difficult for Aaron to win. I think, or at least potentially could, because you know Candace is not her biggest fan if Aaron were to get there. At the same time, I think the bigger player in this was the production coming to the realization that Aaron is not going to be nominated by anyone in the house. She's apparently not going to be nominated by America, and even if she were, she would not be voted out. So let's just get rid of this now, because clearly we can no longer use this to our own benefit, and we've got to start getting these double evictions going. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one other reason I'm very cautiously optimistic about the jury study now is that it seems like this season a lot of people kept talking on the feeds about how, oh, I just want to make jury, I just want to make jury. And maybe that factors into their gameplay, like if they're just playing safe with the goal of making it there. Now that that milestone's reached, maybe they can play a bit more freely. I very much doubt that that's actually going to change or anything, but yeah, we live in hope, I guess.
Right, I think it's a lot more of, God, I hate using the word optimistic when it comes to this show at this point, but it's like, yeah. Now that they know that they don't have the MVP twist to be contending with, there's going to be a lot more deliberate gameplays and deliberate gameplay and a lot more room to make bold moves now that you know that if you're the HOH, you are going to be the one controlling which two or three people end up sitting up on that block at the end of the day. Yeah. All right, so I know we've talked a lot about who we're liking and who we're not liking as players this season. I think we want to get into more specifics. The way we've recently started to like to look at this is evaluating these players based on who our draft boards would look like in a must-win draft, which is to say ranking them based on the order that we think they are more likely to win the game outright. Nothing else matters, just playing for the win. I know the top two are surely going to be the two we've had the most good things to say about this week, certainly, those being Andy and McRae. So which one for you would be at the top of your list this week?
That's hard to say. I'm tempted to say Andy. I mean, I think he is like less well-liked and perhaps less capable than McRae overall. However, I feel like he's in the golden position at the moment, and McRae could easily be collateral damage if, like, as you mentioned earlier, if Amanda wins veto or if Amanda just keeps digging herself a hole and McRae can't do enough to separate himself from her, then he might be damaged by association with that. So I guess the way I'd say it is I would have more faith in McRae as a player, but I could see much more going wrong for him.
Okay, I think that's a very good way of putting it. I would still have McRae at number one just because, first of all, because of Andy winning this potentially unnecessary HOH, although, again, after talking through it, I think there's a lot more merit than my initial assessment indicated. However, McRae just has such an amazing buffer in. As long as people are listening to Amanda, that's always going to be good for McRae. And as soon as people stop listening to Amanda, she's going to be the one who goes, and he's then going to be a free agent who's on great terms with people. And like you said, I think he probably has the most agency to actually progress in the game in the manner that's best suited for him. I think I don't think he even cares that much about Amanda at this point, and I think once she's gone, it's just going to be he is willing to do whatever, and I think he's going to be very effective in doing that in finding a good end game.
Yeah, the other thing about Andy is that, and this is one of the reasons that I have Helen as a tentative third placer, not in the game, but like on our draft list, is that this could easily come down to like a man versus woman thing. Like, Alyssa seems to be all about that, and Aaron and Amanda are both ready to that idea as well. And if that happens, then there's not really much you guys can do about it, given that five of them have gone so far compared to, I think, it's two women. So, you know, that's not going to be an easy thing to get past. And if that does end up happening, Andy's going to be more easily able to get himself in there. Not just because he's gay, although I think that does play a big part in it, because, like, not to stereotype, but typically they're better able to understand how women think and able to work with them. And I think Andy in particular seems to be on good terms with almost all of them.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I think, as mentioned, I think Helen is, I think McRae and Andy are on a tier at the top two picks. I think Helen is on a tier by herself at the number three overall. And I think those three together are easily favorites between the three of them to actually win the game. Like, I would, if I got all three of them against the field, I would be giving odds.
I might be giving odds even with McRae and Andy against the field.
I think they are far enough above.
Yeah. I mean, this season kind of reminds me of Survivor Fiji, which might sound like a weird comparison, but if you think about it, it's like there are two or three people who could conceivably win the game, and everyone else is just a goat. And in theory, you might think, well, shouldn't some of the goats just team up and go to the end? And that might be likely, given how many of them there are, but that's not going to happen. You know, one of these power players is going to be there at the end. They're going to be with one of the goats, and it's not even going to be close.
Right. I think if McRae, Andy, or Helen is in a jury vote against anyone who is not also named McRae, Andy, or Helen, it's just game over.
Yeah, I could see, like, Andy and Helen do seem to be legitimately close, and I could see the two of them being in the end together. And that's one thing that gives me pause about Andy, is I don't know if he's clever enough to cut her loose if he needs to do that later.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible, although I would have more faith in Andy to cut Helen than I would in Helen to cut Andy.
I think I agree with that, yeah.
I think that's probably the only realistic close decision we may end up seeing. And I shouldn't say close decision, but because it's not going to be a close decision. I think either Helen or Andy would be better suited against basically anyone but McRae. But I think that could be something that both of them may struggle with, that we may see come into play. I think it's very likely that both Andy and Helen are down there at the final five, final four, and would be wise to get rid of the other one.
Yeah. Now, here's a question I have, because we talk about those other players being goats in general terms. However, given each of their individual relationships with production, we know, for instance, that Erin and Gina Marie are not, firstly, probably not going to win, and if it looks like they're going to, they are going to be actively prevented from winning by production.
Correct.
So, if you're one of these power players, considering who you want in your end game, how does that factor into things? Because if you have your pick of goats, do you want someone like that who is not going to be able to win? Because whoever that third person is in your final three, it's going to be very, very tempting for them to look at your goat, conclude the same thing, and take them if they win.
Well, I think that's a balance you have to strike in both Survivor and Big Brother and in general, that I would like to be there with one major goat that I can take myself or someone who's going to take me, regardless of taking a goat. Like, I would like to be there with Jessie because I feel like she could be talked into taking me over a goat.
Yeah, and I guess maybe it's not so different because, like, if Jessie's there, they know that Jessie's a goat as well. Even if she doesn't have production on her side necessarily, she's not going to win.
Right.
Okay, let's hold on. Yeah, even if she doesn't have production working against her necessarily, she's not going to win. So, like, why? Like, it doesn't really matter that much. I guess the more interesting thing is with Alyssa, where you know that there is probably an active effort on production's part to make her win, despite her being a goat. Is it worth the risk taking it to the finals then? Because you know that, you know, her popularity might not... Okay. Because you know that her unpopularity might not be the first thing weighing on the jurors' minds, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, I mean, it's once again, just a great balance where you can, if you're sitting there in the finals or final three or whatever, again, and Alyssa's one of the people you're contending with, you can easily make the pitch of, she wouldn't be here if she wasn't Alyssa Riley, basically. Like, she did nothing to get cast other than be related to Rachel. And clearly she got the MVP the first 3 weeks because they were just handing it to her because, like, it was clearly by design, I would say. I don't think that's even debatable. And I think these would be arguments the jurors would be receptive to, but you also have to factor in that if Alyssa does get close to that endgame, they will not hesitate, they being production, to do whatever they have to do to get her there against a goat, no matter what you do about it.
Yeah, that does make me think, though, that, like, let's say you're somebody who is a jury threat in their own right, but maybe can't win a competition. If you manage to get Alyssa to the final three, you might be able to pitch to the third person that, look, if this was just on its own merits, Alyssa obviously wouldn't be winning, but this isn't going to be decided on its own merits. And at least if you go against me, you have what seems to be a fair fight, at least, where, in theory, people could vote for either of us, and whichever one of us gets the most votes is going to win, as opposed to going up against Alyssa, where you're not just going up against her, you're going up against, like, the combined forces of the establishment, if you like.
Right, and I'm sure you could pitch it as, hey, if we're down here at the final three with Alyssa, we don't know what's been going off at the jury house. I'm sure they're getting groomed and pitched by all of the producers as to why they should be voting for Alyssa over basically anyone if Alyssa ends up being a finalist. And you will immediately get the house guests, no talking about production, but then all you have to do is say, look, they know exactly what I'm saying.
There you go, yeah.
there are a lot of compelling reasons for Alyssa to be there, just because you can make that very real pitch of production's going to give her as much help as possible. But at the same time, you have to be concerned that in that situation, very realistically, production's going to give her as much help as possible. And so you got a lot to be concerned about. Yeah. All right. So honestly, I think after McRae, Andy, and Helen, I would have Erin if she were not just so doomed, I think that's where she would be in a straight up game. As far as just for lack of other compelling options, I think Aaron's playing a very strong game at this point. I'm not even bullshitting it to any degree.
Yeah,
I feel like her position is very, very strong if this were a game that they would not just blatantly take out of her hands if she got anywhere near it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not quite sure how that happened, but it has, and I think, you know, however much you might dislike her as a player and a person, you have to give her some credit for that.
Yeah, we were talking briefly off air about the idea of the odds we would place on Aaron winning if they didn't have this publicity nightmare to be concerned about. I think I would put Aaron at least 10% to win if they weren't going to prevent that from happening under any circumstance.
Yeah, I think the better question, though, is how would the jury perceive it if they didn't have all of these other things to consider? Because, like, let's say the voting were anonymous and people couldn't be held accountable for who they voted for, I think you see a lot more people maybe start to consider the idea of voting for Aaron. And similarly, if the votes weren't being conducted live and you knew that the editors would have a chance to whitewash whoever their winner was, and therefore, if Aaron were to win, you know, you maybe wouldn't see some of the worst stuff she said, and therefore you could feel less guilty about voting for her. You know, maybe again she starts to get some more votes. So, you know, I think as it is, though, however much people might like it or dislike her less than the other person, those factors are still going to be weighing on their minds, because ultimately they're concerned about their own reputations as well, and they know that that's primarily going to be decided by who wins their season, right? That's how the season's going to be remembered.
Right, I feel like that would be a much more valid concern if it weren't so likely, in my opinion, that if Aaron was sitting there in the final two, I feel like it'd be pretty damn likely that she would be the one who had played the better game by a pretty wide margin of the two, and I feel like that's kind of an easy out for anyone who wants to vote for her to reward that. They can say, look, I was just voting for who played the best game. It doesn't impact my vote as a juror, what they said about other people, as much as I'm not okay, and I certainly don't endorse those comments.
Well, yeah, and again, she has so many goats to choose from that it's like,
yeah,
if she's sitting there against Jesse, are they really going to vote for Jesse to win? Like, they're not going to be happy about either option, whereas at least with Aaron, they can rationalize it somehow.
Right. No, I totally. And looking, I guess, just a little bit further down the list, Aaron, just to close up on Aaron a little bit, I would take, knowing what we know, that a juror, like we said about Big Brother Canada, is probably going to be coming back in, and I should probably even remove the word probably from that. I think it's a done deal that a juror is coming back in. I would draft Judd above both Aaron and Gina Marie, because I think they are a combined 0% to win. They will not win, and Judd at least has non-zero shots to come in and still non-zero shots to win.
I mean, I would draft Candace above Aaron and Gina Marie if I thought she had any chance of making her back in either. So
right.
It's like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not quite sure how he can factor that stuff in, but yeah, I, assuming it's a possibility, I would have whoever returns above either of the two of them, and maybe even above, like, Jesse as well, realistically.
Jesse is someone who should, as of a couple of weeks ago, really should have been in the endgame, like, every single time, and she's doing her best to play her way out of that. And to the point that she's probably torching any shot she ever had at winning, which was admittedly slim in the first place, but I still feel like she's going to be there.
Yeah, I think it's a sign of just how large the skill disparity is, but I think the consensus number four for both of us is Spencer, who has no allies and is widely perceived as, like, this shifty, creepy pervert.
Yeah.
Somehow he's still, like, one of the quote-unquote favorites to win the game. It's
not only that, he is, apart from McCray, Andy, and Helen, the only one I have any, like, confidence in to actively act in his own best interest.
Yeah.
That's how slim the pickings are as far as this field is concerned.
Yeah,
I think an interesting debate is, not even so much a debate, but I think the 5 and 6 spots for Alyssa and Amanda, I have them in that order, but it's more Alyssa because of the production help and because she's kind of staying off the radar, whereas Amanda has just fallen so drastically for me because of the size of the target she's choosing to put on herself, that it's staggering for Alyssa to be in the top half of my rankings, because I feel like she's such a low percentage winner, but everyone else is a lower percentage winner, so what do you want to do? Like, that's who you're going to have to draft if once you get the number 5 pick. Do you have any thoughts about Alyssa and Amanda? Do you feel like that's fair to have Alyssa above her?
Yeah, but again, we're talking about fractions of a percentage at this point, I think.
Right, yeah, okay. So, yeah, I have... 5, 6, 7, Alyssa, Amanda, Jesse. I would have Judd above Aaron and Gina Marie. I don't know, Dom, I think, you know, we covered a ton today. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
I mean, I'm supposed to have Jessie at 7. You mean she's not the shining star of the season anymore?
Well, that's why she's at number 7. She would normally... trust me, I had her initially at, like, number 2.
Well, I'm sure you did.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. Yeah. I think that's basically going to do it. This should be up... sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I feel almost unclean having talked about this season for, what, 2 hours now, but... You know, thankfully it's done for another week or two. I'm not sure how regular our coverage of the season is going to be now. I mean, I guess we'll try and do it every week, but frankly, you know, if we don't want to do it, we won't do it, because it's really not that inspiring.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to have at least one, probably, hopefully two more episodes of Whodunit coverage, which we are always very excited to be doing. As mentioned at the top of the show, Breaking Bad, very excited to be covering that. I don't know, again, how often that'll be happening. I'd be much more interested in talking about that weekly than I would about Big Brother 15, at least as things stand now. Hopefully the game can get interesting from here. We'll see. I doubt it. But, yeah, I think that's basically going to do it for this week. So, Dom, anything else to add before we get out of here?
No, I'm good.
All right. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Definitely subscribe on iTunes. Tell someone you know who might like the show. Wouldn't that be a novel concept? And I think, so until next time, we will talk to you then. Take care, everybody.